Welcome to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from March 14th, 2001.
From the high desert and the great American Southwest, I bid you all good evening and or good morning, wherever you may be across this great land of ours, from way out west across the dateline on the island of Guam, the rock, eastward to the U.S. Virgin Islands in the Caribbean, south into South America, north all the way to the pole. This is Coast to Coast AM, and I'm Art Bell. And welcome, KIXW. KIXW in Apple Valley, California. 960 on the dial there. Should fill in a hole, 5,000 watts. That means it gets up and goes. So, brand new affiliate, welcome to the network, KIXW, Apple Valley, California. Glad to have you. Well, it was sure a rotten day on Wall Street, wasn't it? And now Tokyo stocks are following suit by mid-morning. The Nikkei was down 169.27. Terrible, terrible. And there are rumors of a Japanese bank going belly up. And that's kind of what drove Wall Street down. It fell 317 to close at 9973, under 10,993.46. NASDAQ slipped 42.68, held up rather well considering. So it's getting kind of scary on Wall Street, and there are a lot of people having to come up with money to cover positions, and so they're starting to sell some of the blue chips is what's happening out there. We'll see where it goes tomorrow. All right. There have been some sightings around the Las Vegas area. Let me read you the following. Art, the reason I'm writing to you is I was wondering if at about dusk you happened to see a hunter orange object. By the way, this description that I'm reading is coming from a rather highly placed political person here in Nevada, statewide. So I'm not going to give, obviously, any names. A hunter orange object that if it was over the Spring Mountains, where it looked like it was at least 300 to 400 feet across. This is what I saw. I live in Las Vegas, own a certain company. I was finished for the day and headed north on Town Center Drive, time about 6:20 p.m. There was an orange light over Kyle Canyon, or it may have been further out, even Cold Creek. This is looking to the northwest. When I first saw the object, it was an orb. Then it elongated and separated like a slinky into six orbs, all the same size as the original. Then it recombined into one orb. I glanced away because I was driving and looked back. Did the same trick all over again, into six, back into one, in a horizontal fashion. Using Mount Charleston as a reference, I'd have to say the elevation of the object was about 9,000 feet above sea level. Did you or anyone else in the area see this? I continued to watch it, and so forth and so on. All right. The answer is yes. I received a whole raft of emails of a similar nature, and so I thought I'd pick one and read it. But something happened here in the Las Vegas area. Including what happened to me Monday night, and I am not giving up on this one easily. I'm talking about the satellite so-called outage, the electromagnetic blanket that descended on me. I received the following. Art, good to hear you back on the air. About your satellite drop-off Monday night, I think there are powers that be that just don't want you talking about sensitive subjects, and this was just a subtle way to let you know that you're under some surveillance. Comes from a ham operator, nightly listener to KVGO AM 1290 in Missoula, Montana. And then I received this. And this one's going to go up on the website. Make of it what you will. Dear Mr. Bell, This is a letter which has taken me 2 days to gather the courage to write. On the one hand, I have information as to how, why, and whom has cut your show on both occasions. On the other, a very well-paying job to protect and a family to feed and a friendship to lose. But after contemplating this matter for said time, I've decided that this country has nothing without freedom, be it press, speech, and the like. 2 days ago, I spoke with a friend who works in a three-letter agency that begins with an N. He sounded really tired. And being near noon, this was very unlike him. I asked, did he not have a hot date the night before? He answered, no, I was working late with Team AB. What's that, I asked. He replied, you know that radio show you like so much? And being I only listened to one, which is Art Bell, I said, yes. He said, well, last night we had to slap his hand again. I then followed with, and why was that? He said AB was opening doors and topics on the air that just aren't good for this country at this time, and so we slapped his hand and knocked his butt off the air. Last time we slapped his hand for having a traitor line, he called it that. In other words, the Area 51 line. We go through a lot of trouble to have top-secret personnel sign secrecy agreements in our country's best interest, and AB openly invites them to break the laws and oaths they have taken. Bottom line, AB makes trouble for us, but we make trouble for him. I then asked, how do you knock him off the air? He said, we have control over all media links, and although we used a different method the first time, it's just as easy as opening your garage with a push of a button. It's getting the order that's hard, making the call when and where, as AB pretty much pushes the border every night that he's on the air. But last night he was just going too far with names and things said in NASA's area that were well into the area of national security. One of the names given as a source for information will not be so willing to speak openly again after today. He then said he had to get off the phone. His wife wanted to use it. End of call. A couple things I've deducted from the phone calls with this friend. One, this agency has a group of people called Team AB, whose job is to listen to my program every night you're on. Well, glad to have you along. We can use all the listeners we can get. My comment. Two, a name given on your show the night the show was cut from the air will not be so open with David Sirita in the future. Three, a comment was made in the fashion of we hear everything AB does both on and off the air. In other words, bugs. Well, bugs in my house, huh? He said later over a beer after softball that same night, we got AB from space. This time, next time, we'll have an EMP truck at his location to even handle AB's backup signal. He said EMP with a very evil grin. Then he will really learn his lesson. I've never written a show before, but we need to have freedom in this country without Big Brother's thumb upon the button. I may lose a friend over this letter, but I did what I feel was right. God bless. So, this could be totally made up baloney. Or not. But, oh, one other thing. HARP was operating the night that the outage occurred. HARP was indeed operating. We've got all the links. Now, speaking of HARP, I just received this art. On Wednesday, February 28th, 2001, my wife was doing some shopping. I was sitting at the in the car listening to the radio. The news came on, and a meteorologist came on to give the weather. He stated that California was bracing itself for a big weekend storm that was HARP-induced. I was shocked to hear him say the words, HARP-induced. And I'm here to tell you that we had a real rainstorm. Well, yes, of course, Ventura County had flooding. The whole state was drenched. But bottom line, he says, the weather guy, the meteorologist, said HARP-induced. A comparison of satellite data from 1970 and 1997 has yielded what scientists say is the first direct evidence that so-called greenhouse gases are building up in Earth's atmosphere and allowing less heat to escape to space. The study contains no evidence on whether Earth's surface temperature is actually increasing. In fact, whether this greenhouse effect will lead to global warming or global cooling is unclear, said the scientists. This is because the greenhouse effect could start a cycle in which more clouds are formed, stopping the sun's energy from reaching Earth's surface in the first place. This is an Associated Press article, folks. So what they're saying is, we're definitely into the greenhouse effect. Whether it's going to end up heating or cooling us, they're not sure about yet, but they are sure that the greenhouse effect has already begun. Now, next hour, we're going to have Will Thomas here, and we're going to do one whale of a show on chemtrails, and contrails, I suppose. And there is some shocking new evidence that Mr. Thomas has tonight. And as we're discussing, you know, the greenhouse effect, let's consider George Bush, big story, Associated Press headline, Bush won't regulate carbon dioxide. President Bush said Wednesday he backed off his campaign promise to regulate carbon dioxide emissions because of the country's energy problems and not because of pressure from industry lobbyists. So I guess it's read my lips time here, huh? So he's backed off his promise to do something about carbon dioxide emissions. He said, I was responding to realities, and the reality is our nation has a problem when it comes to energy, said Bush, reiterating that he fears limits on carbon dioxide emissions from power plants would increase electricity prices. So how do you think that bodes for our future? If the president already this early in the administration has decided to renege on a promise to cut back on emissions in favor of keeping everybody, and I know nobody likes a high power bill, right? But how does that bode for our future? Probably not too well. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from March 14th, 2001.
Here's an interesting headline. Nevada population grows 66%. Workers flocking to new Las Vegas resorts helped boost Nevada's population during the last decade by a whopping 66%, tops in the nation, according to the census figures released on Tuesday. So now we're really up there. I mean, this is ridiculous. And here in Pahrump, Little Pahrump, Nevada, where I live, we're in double-digit growth. We are the fastest-growing small town in America. It is astounding what is going on here. Absolutely astounding. I thought I would... Late in the program last night, a lot of people have been asking about my wildcat, Comet, who is now three-quarters of the way toward becoming a normal cat. I mean, you can actually handle him without fearing for skin removal, instant skin removal. And, you know, he'll sit on my lap now. You have no idea what a long transition that is. He was absolutely feral. Spent 6 months living in a bathroom because he couldn't be near human beings, and then it went on from there. Comet has learned to hate cameras. I don't know exactly what it is, because I used to be able to take photographs of him when he was a kitten, or sort of just coming out of kittenhood. But now, there is no way you get anywhere near Comet with a camera. Even if you hold it behind your back and then you slowly bring it out, he knows a camera 10 million miles away, and he will take off at 10,000 miles an hour the moment he sees any kind of camera, digital, regular, 35 millimeter, it doesn't matter what it is. He knows a camera in the hand is probably going to mean a flash in the eye, I guess. So he takes off. He hates cameras, and I can't take any more photographs of him. But he doesn't know about webcams. You see, I have a room that is simply covered with equipment. I mean, there is equipment everywhere. Broadcast equipment, ham equipment, computer equipment. You know, this place is, well, it's a control room. It is a control room. Somebody sent me, incidentally, a very nice sort of copper radio room thing from a ship, and I put that on my front door. It says radio room. At any rate, there is so much equipment in here that a webcam, even though it's a camera, to Comet is not a camera. He doesn't know it's a camera. It's just another piece of equipment here, and he's not afraid of it. So I brought him in here last night toward the end of the program and held him up for a photograph, and I got a pretty good one, too. It's on my webcam right now, and I'm going to leave it up there for a little while so you can see it if you want. This is Comet, what, a year and a half, 2 years later or more? That wild beast of a cat that I've got. Incredible. A compliance officer for the U.S. Department of Agriculture was expected to be in Fayetteville today to look at John Fairley's glowing chicken bones. Thus far, nobody else can explain why the bones are glowing. Not police officers, firefighters, county health workers, doctors, nor nurses. Fairley says he went outside Tuesday night to feed some leftover chicken to his German shepherd, Tasha, when he happened to notice the bones were glowing green. Oh. He called the Army Medical Center and then, of course, the Fayetteville Police and probably every other agency in town. Quote, they had very little faith in my rendering my report at first, Fairley said. When the police officer came up my driveway and saw them glowing at him, 18 vehicles were stacked around my house in a short period of time. End quote. Fairley lives on, well, I won't give the street, in the Foxfire neighborhood off Morgantown Road on the city's west side. Captain Greg Arnett of the Fayetteville Fire Department said he's seen some strange things in more than 20 years of fighting fires in Fayetteville. Parrot named Greg in a tree and pythons in a basement, but this was the ultimate. So let's think about this for a moment. Why would chicken bones glow green? And if you picked up a piece of chicken and it was glowing green, would you eat it? Well, no. What could possibly be worse than that? And the answer is, you eat your chicken, you start to carry bones outside for your dog, and you notice they're glowing green, the now nearly empty chicken bones, like the old, what could be worse than, you know, a worm in an apple. Half a worm in an apple is the answer. Anyway, Tasha apparently ate some of the bones before Fairley realized that something was wrong. That night and on Wednesday, some of his family and friends said they felt nauseated. Well, of course, if you ate green chicken, glowing green chicken, and you found out about it, you'd feel sick, all right. Tasha was sluggish. Clinton Weaver, a spokesman at Cape Fear Valley, said that 7 people who ate the chicken were treated and released. The hospital did not conduct any tests on the bones, so we're going to have to wait and find out what the real story on the glowing chicken bones is. But I'll be interested in a follow-up when we get it. I'm sure you will, too. Finally, this sent to me, which is pretty funny, I think. A man walking along a California beach was deep in prayer. All of a sudden, he said out loud, "Lord, grant me one wish." Suddenly, the sky clouded. His head clouded. And in a booming voice, the Lord said, "Because you have tried to be faithful to me in all ways, I will grant you one wish." The man said, "Okay, build me a bridge to Hawaii so I can drive over any time that I want to." The Lord said, "Your request is very materialistic. Think of the logistics of that kind of undertaking, the supports required to reach the bottom of the Pacific, the concrete and steel it would take I can do it, but it's hard for me to justify your desire for worldly things. Take a little more time, please. Think of another wish, a wish you think would honor and glorify me. So, the man sat and thought about this for a long time, as he certainly properly should have, asking for such a materialistic thing as a bridge to Hawaii, for goodness sakes. So he thought about it. Finally, he said, Lord, I wish that I could understand women. I want to know how they feel inside, what they're thinking when they give me the silent treatment, why they cry, what they mean when they say nothing, and how I can make a woman truly happy. Several moments of silence went by, and finally the booming voice of God said, You want two lanes or four on that bridge? I understand that. It'd be easier to build a bridge to Hawaii than it would be to understand women. Nobody's ever going to do that. All right, well, we're going to do open lines for the next half hour following the commercial break at the bottom here, and information or whatever you get on your local station, and then we'll be back. By the way, I'm still waiting for the photographs from the L.A. trip. When I get them, you'll get them. This is Coast to Coast AM.
This is Premier Networks. That was Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM on this Somewhere in Time. Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from March 14, 2001.
Walking into his house about 5 minutes before airtime, so he missed me read the description of this thing in Vegas, is Peter Davenport at the National UFO Reporting Center in Seattle, Washington. And because this comes from somebody in state politics, and because it represents one of about a dozen exactly similar reports that I have, I'm going to read it again so that Peter can hear it. He's on the line right now. Then we'll bring him up because he's got news. It reads, Hello, Highwayman. That's me, I guess. Art. The reason I'm writing to you is I was wondering if at about dusk you saw a hunter orange object that if it was over the Spring Mountains, that's where I live here, where it looked like it was at least 300 to 400 feet across. This is what I saw. I live in Las Vegas and own... And he names the company. I won't give it. I was finished for the day, headed north on Town Center Drive. The time was around 6:20 p.m. There was an orange light over Kyle Canyon, or if it was further out, maybe even Cold Creek. This is looking to the northwest. When I first saw the object, it was an orb. Then it elongated and separated like a slinky into six orbs, all the same size as the original. Then it recombined into one orb. I glanced away because I was driving and looked back. It did the same trick all over again one into six and back into one in a horizontal fashion. Using Mount Charleston as a reference, that's the mountain directly behind me that you'll see on my webcam sometimes, I'd have to say the elevation of the object was about 9,000 feet above sea level. Did you or anyone else in the area see it? I continued to watch it, and after the last recombination, it just plain winked out of sight. I don't know. Please get back to me on this. Well, again, I will not read his name because he is somebody who would be hurt by giving this kind of a report. That is representative of about a dozen of exactly the same thing. That's why I read it. So something obviously happened again near me. But this is not the only place where things are going on. In a moment, Peter Davenport will comment, no doubt, on what I just read, and then has some more information for you. Stay right there.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from March 14th, 2001.
From the National UFO Reporting Center in Seattle, Washington, here's Peter. Peter Davenport, welcome. Did you hear what I read?
Thank you, Art. I heard it, and I'm not surprised by it, but I almost jumped out of my skin by the color that was cited in this report. I think it was burnt orange or something like that you mentioned. That color has been the color of choice, no pun intended, in a number of reports that have been coming to us over the last, I would estimate, 2 to 3 weeks.
Okay, he called it Hunter Orange.
Hunter Orange.
Right.
I don't know what that object was. It sounds very strange. Of course, the first thing that would have to be done is we would have to rule out any kind of military activity or anything like that. But it does sound very unusual to see one object turn into several and then have them go back into one object, I think you described there.
Twice, actually. Yes.
Twice.
Yes.
And the reason I find it so interesting, too, is we had a similar event over Puget Sound last night. I have been working like a slave all day long talking to witnesses to yet another dramatic fireball event over Seattle, very similar to one that occurred last April 28th, Friday night last year, about two days after you had started your sabbatical.
Mm-hmm.
But last night, we have taken now over half a dozen reports from actual eyewitnesses to this event. They saw an object roughly yellow to orange that streaked the length of Puget Sound, at least from South Seattle up to North Seattle, a distance of about 20 miles. I can only estimate the distance it covered, but I estimate that it covered that distance in probably 15 seconds.
15 seconds.
Judging from the reports of people. And it's a similar color to the one that is cited in the report you read over the air.
I wonder what's going on, Peter.
Yeah. Very similar to report to what this gentleman wrote, too, not only a week ago from Belleville, Wisconsin. It's about 30 miles southwest of Madison in the southern part of Wisconsin. We will be posting newly received reports to our website database tomorrow afternoon, and okay, people will be able to see the myriad of reports that we have received recently, but very similar in description from Belleville, Wisconsin, of multiple orange or red or yellow objects in a straight line moving across the sky. I am not in the least surprised by this individual's report, even though I'm quick to admit, Art, that I have no idea what he saw.
All right. Well, I know it was quick and spur of the moment. I really appreciate your coming on the air, as always, Peter. Let's get the information out very quickly. Donations are what, you know, keeps Peter alive, keeps him going.
That and a lot of coffee.
Yeah, that and a lot of coffee. National UFO Reporting Center, $10 or $20 donations are very welcome. It's a tax-exempt Washington State organization, and this is where you get this kind of information. So make out checks for the National UFO Reporting Center. And the address, Peter?
The address is the National UFO Reporting Center. Next line is P.O. Box 45623. 45623. Next line is University Station, and that is Seattle, Washington, zip code 98145. And those people who sent those reports, if they would like to record them to our online reporting forum on our website, ufocenter.com, I would be grateful, Art, and we will post them anonymously, of course, to our website database, and all of your audience will have access to them, and they can see what people have reported.
Bless your heart, Peter.
Thank you very much,
Thank
Art.
You, my friend. Good night. All right, that's Peter Davenport at the National UFO Reporting Center in Seattle. So maybe we've got kind of a flap going on here, and these things seem to go in cycles. Maybe we're on the upside of a cycle at the moment. All right, to the lines. First time caller line, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, Art, how are you?
I'm all right. Where are you calling from,
I'm
sir?
I'm from Seattle. My name is Ralph.
Ralph. First time caller, Ralph?
Yes, sir.
All right, then you are legitimately on this line. What's up?
I just want to ask you a question. I didn't catch the complete show with Kathleen Keating when
yeah.
the last time she was on.
Right.
And I just want to know whether or not she had made any kind of comment to what Father Martin, may he rest in peace, had said about the that we are expected to see the worst of things happening in, within the next 7 years.
Yes, as a matter of fact, she said that all of this will begin to come down in a handful of years. That means within five. At least terrestrial hands.
Oh, really?
Yes. Within 5 years, it begins to come down, she said.
Okay. That's answered my question. Have a good day, sir.
Hardy, hardy. Let's see. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hi.
Yes, Art. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing. Where are you?
Yeah, this is Dean in Tampa, Florida.
All right, Dean.
Yes, sir. You'd mentioned George Bush Jr.'s carbon monoxide emissions, how he's reneging, kind of like the read my lips situation, like his father.
Read my lips and hold your nose. Yes.
Exactly, sir. I think it's such an amazing thing right now when we look at just the fact that this is truly his first act of, not taking care of what should be taken care of properly. I mean, our Mother Earth is it's such a delicate balance, and I think for us to actually increase the actual damage that we're doing and actually, letting the big business do this, it's almost to the point now where I used to live in Alaska, and it's truly the last frontier, and when I see frontiers like that, and even land, even down here in Florida, I see how big business has affected the environment. I think this is definitely a wrong move, and it goes to show you that truly the almighty dollar is not actually running the country in common sense.
Well, I think in between Tampa and Orlando, you recently had a pretty big fire raging, didn't you?
Yes, sir.
And you had a pretty big drought down there where it ought to be raining a lot, huh?
Oh, this is very true.
So things, they are a-changing, and I think it has to do to some degree with what man is doing, not necessarily entirely, but to some degree with what man is doing. And so for him to be reneging on his first big promise about emissions, well, that's kind of insane, if you ask me.
Yes, sir, and I'll tell you one last thing. When I was in Alaska, I saw firsthand what the global warming has done. I watched a glacier disappear 5 miles in one season.
I know.
And actually, after 2,000 years, that glacier only moved a quarter inch a year, and then suddenly it just disappeared. So it's a big thing, and it's something that's happening to us all. We see that with our polar ice caps, too.
Yeah, I lived in Alaska, and I saw everything you saw, and I know they are retreating, and they will be gone very soon.
Well, I just hope we're not next.
I appreciate your call. Well, we're somewhere in the chain of things. You know, when we talk about various fish and die-offs and, you know, things changing and predators beginning to go after new prey because their old prey doesn't exist anymore, that sort of thing. Well, we're in that chain. We're one of the dominoes. And maybe some in our domino are a little taller, and they can look over. And they can look over the pile of dominoes, and they can see the collapse coming their way, if you follow me. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Thank you.
Turn your radio off, please. Extinguish it. And then speak.
Am I on now?
Probably. Where are you calling from?
Cleveland, Ohio. WTAM.
WTAM, the monster, yes.
Yeah, I had a comment about last night's guest and Kathleen Keating.
All right. Dr. Thompson. Dr. Thompson last night.
Yes. He was claiming that the flood, 3100 B.C.
Yes.
I think there's too much evidence that it wouldn't have happened then. And I'm thinking on the lines that maybe the flood is what caused the ice age.
Well, actually, I think a flood would cause exactly the opposite. It would turn everything into kind of a temperate climate. because you'd be storing more energy.
I think maybe the flood is what caused the beginning, like another catastrophic thing of the ice age. The
well,
water
during the period of time that the rain was coming down or whatever caused the flood was occurring, yes, maybe then, certainly.
Because if you go by the theory that they think there was a vapor barrier and the Earth climate was the same all the way around the Earth, and then the flood came, there had to be weather change.
Big time. Big time weather changes.
And maybe that's where, you know, there was so much water over the Earth and places froze, and that's what created the glaciers.
Yep, that could be.
Okay. And then the ideology. A lot of people called up and said, ideology, that's wrong, blah, blah, this and that. She keeps defending it. I read the Bible myself. And
You mean like a picture of Jesus, for example,
right,
on the wall?
Or statues, this and that, things made
yes.
by men's hands.
Yeah, but there are idols, see. They're okay because they're Christian idols. There are idols. It's other idols that are idols. It's like the Taliban. You know, the Taliban in Afghanistan. They look at Buddha and they say, oh, look at that idol. You know, it's not their idol.
It's not God.
Well,
people worship these things.
Well, I know, but again, sir, Christ is our idol. He's our guy. He's the Christian's idol. But if you were to take, let's say, a figurine of Christ to Afghanistan, hey, good luck. They wouldn't think of that the way we think of that. They'd begin gathering the blasting caps and dynamite, and you'd just have to get out of the way. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, how are you?
I'm reasonably all right.
You guys changed your format. You
turn your radio off.
Okay.
Nothing new about that. I've been saying it for years. It's going to be inscribed on my gravestone. Turn off your radio.
There used to not be any screeners on this, and I called last night to...
There are no screeners. There's only me.
Who is this?
Art.
This is Art Bell?
Yes.
I'm on the radio right now?
Well, son of a gun, you are.
Oh, darn it. Well, anyway... Hey, your Dr. Thompson last night?
Yes.
Dr. Thompson, he has quite a few good points, but you know, I have a whole bunch of books from prior to the first of this century.
Yes.
They were written, and there were a number of very good studies done on the existence of the Atlantean and the Murian continents.
Yes.
And one I have right in front of me here.
All right, look, no argument. I think all of us, at least, that listen to this program, the majority of us, believe that there were other civilizations that came before ours. We argue about whether it was Sitchin's way or Thompson's way or forbidden archaeology's way or, you know, but we all pretty much agree there may have been stuff that's come and gone.
Okay, that's true. But there were geological studies done during the 18th century, during the 1800s, which right now in the center of the Atlantic Ocean, there is a ridge called the Dolphin Ridge, which was discovered by a British ship called the Dolphin.
Yes.
And this ridge extends from the Azores Islands, which Ignatius Donnelly claims was the center of the Atlantean Empire, and it extends all the way from the Azores Islands up to the up to almost to Great Britain. Now, across from Great Britain to the American continent was also part of this, and this was the land bridge from Europe into the Americas. And this barrier there is what he says caused the ice age, because there was no Gulf Current. And, it amazes me that more people don't study these older geographical studies.
Well, here's what catches me. If civilization has achieved some level of scientific advancement several times in the past, been more or less squished, then, well, we're doing pretty well right now. If you don't look at the stock market, we're doing pretty well right now. Yet the weather is beginning to turn terrible on us. No question about that.
And the question of whether or not we are having an impact on it, or if it's a normal cycle of the planet.
Well, you got to ask yourself, do you feel lucky this century? You know, Something's going to happen.
Something's
going to happen. All right, sir, I really appreciate your call. Yeah, I think there were others. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Yes.
Extinguish your radio.
Oh.
You're turning that off.
I'm sorry.
It's all right.
Okay. I was on the internet, actually.
Oh, I see. But, well, then you're
okay.
Your computer. Yes.
Yes.
Where are you?
I'm in Lubbock, Texas.
Lubbock, huh?
Yeah.
How's everything in Lubbock?
Hey, Lubbock's pretty good today.
Is it? All right.
We had like a mini sandstorm, which is, you know, nothing to us. It was a nice day.
A mini sandstorm?
Yeah.
To Lubbockans, it's nothing.
Yes.
Okay. Well, what's up anyway?
Well, what I wanted to talk to Art about was I wanted to question him about his statements that he has made about he is not able to make a leap of faith. You know, when he's talking to Catherine Keating or
yes.
Even Ed Dames, you know, different issues will come up.
You mean you would want to say to Art that you question the fact that he can't believe in say, God, or make that final leap of faith.
Right. What I wanted to add...
But, you know, I really couldn't put you on the air with Art to say something like that.
Well, excuse me, what did you just say?
I said I couldn't put you on the air with Art to say something like that.
And why not?
Well, I mean, you're questioning his ability to make a leap of faith, and...
No,
he's
I'm
a sensitive guy. You know,
No.
Do you know that lately Art has been a little depressed over some things, and he could break out in tears right in public radio over something like that?
No.
I mean, you surely couldn't expect me to just slam you on the air and let him ask a question like that.
Yeah, this is very intriguing because I know him from listening to him that he's not someone who's going to break out in tears over something like this.
I'm telling you
that I'm trying to.
You got to understand. I work with him, and he's emotional tonight. He can't handle it. I'm telling you.
Okay.
But I mean, you would go on with him anyway, huh?
Well, no. Well, I would go on with him anyway. In this sense, what I want to know, because I'm a parent, and I know he's a parent, and I know he has like. He's undergone some excruciating, unbelievable...
You wouldn't want to remind him of that, would you?
No, I don't want to remind him of it, but I want to ask him.
Well,
listen,
you'll have to call Art.
I want to ask him.
Not listening to me. There's no more time tonight. You'll have to call Art tomorrow night. He'll be in a better mood then. All right?
I know it's not acceptable,
but we're simply out of time. I'm sorry.
The trip back in time continues with Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM. More Somewhere in Time coming up.
No one waiting by your side. You've been wrong. I've rushed you home. You know it's just your foolish plan. Hey, love. Got me on my knees, yeah. Begging, darling, please, yeah. Darling, won't you leave my worry now? Dressed in red.
Premier Networks presents Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from March 14th, 2001.
Good morning from the high desert. Good to have you. It's been a while, and about a million people have requested it. So tonight, the subject of chemtrails revisited. William Thomas is no stranger to this program. This veteran award-winning journalist has made five guest appearances with me since I began covering chemtrails for the Environmental News Service in January 1998. That's William talking about himself. Since our first show, he says, the author of Scorched Earth and Bringing the War Home has documented the results of his 26-month chemtrail investigation in his book, Probing the Chemtrail Conundrum. William Thomas has also co-produced a 27-minute video showing some of the best chemtrail footage I've seen anywhere. This broadcast-quality documentary presents convincing documentation pointing to a secret government program aimed at averting the kind of climatological chaos that Whitley and I describe in the coming global superstorm. Now, later in the program, I'll be giving Thomas's website, that's actually linked to ours right now, so you can get it right now, and a toll-free number for ordering his book and video. You decide whether the theories you're about to hear make sense. Of more pressing concern is the absence of official admission that anything out of the ordinary is taking place in the skies over the U.S., Canada, and other allied countries. Since the chemtrail story broke right here on this program, more than 2 years ago, officials have insisted that these bizarre aerial plumes and patterns are simply condensation trails from normal airline traffic. Tonight, their denials end forever. William Thomas has agreed to come back on the air to reveal here, for the first time, a major breakthrough in chemtrails credibility. He's on the line. And shortly will be the person whose persistence resulted in the first official admission that these mysterious plumes have nothing at all to do with normal airline procedures. So don't go anywhere. The whole story lies directly in front of you.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from March 14th, 2001.
Now, he's an investigative journalist. He's been on this story for years now. And we're going to backtrack, obviously, for just a few moments at the beginning of the program for those who are new listeners to the program and have no idea what chemtrails might be. We're going to sort of back up, and I know it's painful for those of you who are probably too well informed on the subject, but it's necessary because we've got a zillion new affiliates, a zillion new listeners, and they have no idea what this is all about. William Thomas, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Art. A pleasure to be back with you tonight.
All right. I know, and everybody knows, what a contrail is. It's condensation that aircraft produce at a very high altitude. It leaves a puffy little white something or another behind it under the right conditions. It can linger for a little while, but it usually dissipates and goes away. And that's what follows a jet aircraft. And we've seen them all our lives, I think, most of us anyway. There are a few out there who might not remember when there were contrails in the sky, but not too many anymore. So we know what contrails are. What in the world got you on the track of what you're calling chemtrails?
Back in January 98, I received a call from the managing editor at Environment News Service. I've been working with them for a number of years, including filing reports from Kuwait immediately after the Gulf War.
Right.
The managing editor there, Jim Crabtree, asked me to check out a report from a Mr. William Wallace out in Washington State. He's on the eastern side there in the mountains, living very remotely with his wife, and he was reporting large four-engine jets laying crisscross patterns of persistent white plumes in clear blue skies overhead, turning those skies into a milky haze that completely obscured the entire area. And further, he said, seemed to be making he and his wife very ill.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really know what to make of that report, but when William Wallace sent me his videotape, I realized immediately, as a former pilot, member of the military, an ocean sailor conversant with skies and normal contrails, that the images on his video were anything but normal condensation trails. And Mr. Wallace turned me on to several individuals in California and out in Tennessee who had also been tracking this phenomenon. And after I contacted them, they in turn led me to other people. And before too long, Art, I had over 1,000 eyewitness written reports, including statements from pilots, police officers, and former military personnel, all very perplexed at these lingering white plumes, which you accurately describe, could not have been normal contrails.
All right. I did describe kind of what a normal contrail is. How is a mother to know the difference between a normal contrail and a stinky chemtrail? What is the visual difference? And I've experienced it myself, so I could do this, but you're the guy. So you tell me, what's the difference? If with the people's eyes, with their nose, with what they can see, how do you know it's a chemtrail, not a contrail?
A normal contrail most often appears as a pencil-thin white line behind a high-flying aircraft. And as we watch it, it fades like the wake behind a boat.
It does, of course, spread out a little bit from the original thin contrail, right?
Depending on conditions, that's right. In fact, it could spread out quite a bit. Though, normally and most often, Canadian aviation officials and U.S. authorities tell us condensation trails behind aircraft disappear within 50 seconds of being formed. So the big difference, and we often see this now as we observe the sky closely, is we will see a normal thin contrail at high altitude, and below it, at lower altitudes, thick smoke-like plumes that billow out and do not dissipate, but in fact spread to cover the entire sky. And that's the tip-off, Art. If we see a condensation trail at higher altitude than a plume lower down, we know something is amiss, because, in fact, just the opposite should be true. The higher you go, the bigger the contrail formed, because it's colder the higher we fly. So these plumes that are below condensation trail altitudes are very suggestive. I also caution people not to phone airport authorities or other officials unless they see more than one of these lines. That's the other major tip-off here. When we are seeing multiple parallel rows, grid patterns, or X's, we know immediately these are not airliners, because except immediately around airports, airliners must maintain a separation. And these parallel lines are often formed way too closely to that would...
By the way, why would you imagine, William, just out of curiosity, that the X pattern or the crossing pattern of these chemtrails would be important as opposed to just parallel lines, as an example?
My surmise is that the characteristic X's that we are seeing all over North America are used to mark the spot in satellite photographs. They are very distinct in these photographs.
Well, they yeah, absolutely, from satellite, you'd be able to see them very easily. Now, I had, since we seem to be a nice testing ground here in my part of Nevada for just about everything in the world, my wife and I had an experience. Gee, it was a couple of years ago at least, William, and I think I described it to you then, and briefly again, it was a beautiful, clear, sunny day. Very dry here in Nevada, typically desert weather. Beautiful day, as a matter of fact. My wife and I were both outside. And here comes the X patterns. Shoo, 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 shoo. And we had some X's up there. And instead of doing what a contrail normally does, these began to turn from white to kind of a dirty color. And moreover, the beautifully clear, dry day here in the desert suddenly turned to one where at least half the sky, or better than half the sky, was now covered with kind of a dingy colored, almost a brown colored gunk that appeared to come from these damn so-called contrails. Now, on top of that, the air began to take on kind of an oily, icky feel to it. And then my wife and I both got sick as hell for a while. That happened to us. Is that normal, or is that abnormal?
It's normal in terms of chemtrail experience. Many observers report a metallic taste in their mouth, the smell of oil or petroleum refineries.
What we got is
oil. In the area.
We got oil, and believe me, we have no refineries anywhere near us. This is a very clean community that way, and just a valley unto its own. But I saw the sky transformed, Will. I saw it transformed, and I got sick from it. And I have no question in my mind about that, nor does my wife.
Some of us, Art, have almost driven our cars off the road when observing these trails wearing sunglasses, and we have seen prismatic bars of color in these trails in the sky, indicative of a petroleum or chemical signature. These are not sun dogs. These are not moon bows. These are brief bars of color. In fact, they've even been photographed, and that's
telltale. Let me be a skeptic and say, look, these airplanes are flying. They use petroleum products in airplanes. Maybe that would account for some of it. Why shouldn't I believe that it's just, you know, some sort of petroleum byproduct from an airplane?
One of the most startling aspects of this entire story is, as you mentioned at the top of the show, we are used to seeing contrails and airliners all of our lives. Many of us live near airports or air bases. And again, I am receiving thousands, and have been for years, thousands of emails from people who are grabbing their neighbors, their friends, their spouses, stopping their cars, going outside, and pointing at the sky and pointing cameras at these strange plumes that we thought we understood. So obviously there is something very unusual going on here. And for the skeptics out there, you mentioned the high desert country. Clifford Carnicom, who has been researching this story, as you know, for also quite a number of years, has made a significant contribution, as far as I'm concerned, in coming up with official meteorological data showing temperature and humidity at varying altitudes over Santa Fe, New Mexico, on the days when heavy gridding was observed and photographed. And this data shows conclusively that the temperature and humidity at those altitudes absolutely prevent the formation of condensation trails. We need temperatures, according to NASA, of minus 40 degrees centigrade or less, and we need a humidity around 70%. And as you know, in the summertime in the desert, you're not going to find those conditions even at the altitudes we're talking about, 25, 30,000 feet.
And that's
yet these plumes form.
That's typically where they're formed, 25, 30,000 or better?
That's right.
All right. So this is what we have. Now, imagine, folks, what sort of incredible conspiracy there would have to be for this to be going on in the skies across North America. And by the way, Will is in, you're in Canada, Western Canada, right, Will?
I'm on the West Coast, yes.
So it would have to be a conspiracy of massive proportions. There would have to be all kinds of secrets kept. You would think all kinds of people would know at least something. You would compartmentalize something like this, but a lot of people would know. And so one question would be, where are all the people who are ought to be out there ratting this one out, Will?
A lot of them are frightened. This is a national security issue. The penalties that we've seen during the Vietnam War include lengthy jail terms.
It's funny you should mention that. The one only question that Ed Dames, a remote viewer, has regularly, absolutely refused to answer is what contrails are. And you know what he says when you ask him, when you really push him about it? He says, Art, I don't want to go to jail. That's the one thing that you've asked me about over the years that I just, and I still, and I won't comment on because I don't want to go to jail.
That's right. And, oh, where are we now? 8 years ago, I wrote a book called Bringing the War Home, and this book fully documents the biological war that took place in the Gulf, the hidden secret war. It documents the origins and causes of Gulf War illness. Nearly 10 years later, the mainstream media is coming out with stories verifying the information I presented in that book. It's taken that long, Art, and, you know, we have a corporate-controlled media here that simply is not going to report any story that does not fit their mindset or any story that, you know, contravenes any kind of security issue.
Well, in fact, to prove that, I have in front of me a USA Today story, which we'll read after a while here, which was written after, I guess, USA Today interviewed you. Is that correct?
For at least an hour.
For at least an hour. And, oh, my, what they came up with. I think the audience is going to be fascinated by this. But after the bottom of the hour, we're going to do something kind of interesting. We're going to talk to a fellow named Mark Porter. Who is Mark Porter, Will?
Mark Porter is a resident of Victoria, British Columbia, the capital city here in B.C. on the West Coast. And Mark has been watching intense aerial gridding and X's and circles over that coastal city for at least 2 years. He became acquainted with me through my website and through the shows we've been doing. Art, he's been one steady listener. And last December 8th, Mark Porter made a call to the Victoria International Airport to express his concern over massive aerial activity over that city during the previous 2 days. And he received a very interesting reply.
Actually, the reply came from, without his name yet, although we're going to give it, the reply came from the Victoria Airport Authority. That's what you have up there, I guess, is airport authorities, huh?
That's right. This is this used to be a government body. It's now what we call a crown corporation under government auspices. This particular individual is the manager for airport planning and environment. It is his job to know about pollution from aircraft. So he was very interested in the call he received from Mark Porter, and this gentleman made some inquiries, phoned back, and left a message on Mr. Porter's answering machine.
And yeah, by the way, I would like to add that it was a very odd answering machine with a very odd tape, and somehow the tape and the answering machine got separated. And you had the tape, and you said, oh, my God, you wouldn't believe what I've got, but I can't find a tape machine that'll play it back. It's an odd-sized tape, somewhere in between microcassette and whatever the next size would be, I guess, an in-between size. And right up until about, oh, I don't know what, 24 hours before airtime, we didn't think we'd be able to get this on the air, but we actually have the recording, don't we, Will?
That's right. We have the recording back with its machine, which made the courier truck as it was leaving the loading dock as we tracked this man down who owned the machine. So we're ready to roll.
Would you call this the smoking gun evidence that people in government positions know something?
Absolutely right. After we go to air with this, there'll be no backing away into airliners and contrails.
Uh-huh. All right. Well, what we're going to do is break here at the bottom of the hour, and when we do get back, first we're going to talk to Mark Porter. He's the man who made the call. But then the airport authority got back to him and answered him. And at first, by the way, denied that they had said that, but then later said, no, I'll stand by the statement I made. So an official from the Victoria Airport Authority, well, you'll hear it for yourself coming up. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Have you looked up lately? See any X's? A conspiracy that grand, could it really be? Well, that's the story we're telling on Coast to Coast AM.
This is Premier Networks. That was Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM on this Somewhere in Time. we take you back to the past on Art Bell Somewhere in Time.
We're talking about chemtrails, not contrails, chemtrails. Things crossing our skies with chemicals in them. And by the way, we'll discuss exactly what's in them because we have some information about that as well. But in a moment, coming up, we've got Mark Porter, a man who took action, put up with this long enough, and finally decided that's it, and made a phone call. And surprisingly, from the government in Canada, they called him back. They actually called him back. It was short, it was sweet, but it certainly was meaningful. So that is what's immediately ahead. Don't move.
Now, we take you back to the past on Art Bell Somewhere in Time.
Let's now, Will, are you there?
I'm here.
All right, good. Let's go to Mark Porter. Mark, good morning.
Hello, Mr. Bell.
Hi there. Mark, where are you?
I'm in Victoria, British Columbia, Canada.
Victoria, B.C. All right. When did you first hear about Will and chemtrails and all that?
Well, actually, I think I heard the first broadcast on your program. I guess that goes back a few years now.
It certainly does.
But I was aware of the activity in the sky probably going back 2 years before that. Just became aware of it, was noticing it, thought it was very strange. And when Will Thomas came on your program, that's when things all began to make sense for me. The activity in our city goes on, I would say, weekly. Sometimes several times a week. In the summer months, there were times when, for weeks at a time, they would be doing it every day, laying down parallel lines, sort of a tic-tac-toe formation sometimes, where they'd be crisscrossing.
Yep.
And recently, I would say in the last year or so, large X's are being laid down right in the center of the city.
Right.
The other thing I'm noticing as well, and I haven't heard too much about this, but I'm seeing circular formations as well that are forming. A plane is just essentially doing a circle.
Are you in an airport pattern?
Well, there is an airport close by in Sydney, which is probably 20 miles away.
Well, that might account for a circular pattern. Who knows? Sometimes they have to circle. Anyway, you've been noticing these so-called chemtrails for a long time. Obviously, when you heard Will, that reinforced something you were probably wondering about, and you went, oh, my God.
Well, the issue for me really was the fact that the material would not dissipate. I would notice that it would spread out and remain in the sky for hours at a time, and oftentimes by the end of the day, we'd have a white mist in the sky.
Any physical effects?
I have at times. I can't say directly in effect as a result of the spraying, but I've noticed over the last few years that tired, sometimes a sore throat that doesn't seem to go away, but lingers for months at a time. I talk to people who certainly seem to be having illnesses that are prolonged and aren't going away.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to say there's a direct correlation there, but certainly there appears to be something.
There may be. Certainly there's something weird happening in our skies. All right, so it must have been one day when you saw a particular pattern or something obviously more than usual motivated you to make a phone call. What happened that day?
Well, that's exactly it. I'm aware of the basic formations and patterns that they make, but this particular day it was so excessive. It was extremely excessive, and I found it so disturbing that I knew I had to make a call. I'd made calls before and had been essentially brushed off, was told that there was actually nothing in the sky flying over areas. I would get on a payphone or whatever, call them up, and they'd say, well, there is no planes that we're aware of that are flying in that area. So I was always brushed off in the past, but this day I just felt that, you know, I'll make another call, because all of those particular formations were present in the sky this day. And I could see as many as three planes at one time making formations, all within a short distance of one another. And they were just flying around up there, moving back and forth and doing their thing. And I thought, you know, this is so obscene, this is so disgusting and disturbing that I have a responsibility to make a call here, and let's just see if something will happen. And so I spoke with one gentleman can't recall his name, but I began to describe the situation to him, and he wasn't surprised. He essentially indicated that they were aware of it, but they didn't know what it was. And I described one of the planes that that was flying, and he indicated to me that what I was describing was a military aircraft. It was a large white plane with a red marking on the tail. And I wasn't able to see any other markings on the plane, but the red on the tail was very evident. And he mentioned that he thought that was military, but he suggested that I speak with someone else. And so he forwarded the gentleman who left the message on my answering machine to me. And so I spoke with him and essentially described exactly what I was observing, what I was seeing.
Right.
And the fact that I was very disturbed by this, and I thought that there was a responsibility for some investigation into it. And so he told me that he would get back to me in short order. And, in fact, he did. And so he called back. I was not home at the time, but left a message on my answering machine.
Now, the gentleman you're talking about is a man named, and we can give the name, right, Will?
Go ahead.
Terry Stewart of the Victoria Airport Authority.
Correct.
And he made a very short and sweet but telling return call.
Correct.
To Mark. And so if we can do it... Will, let's play it for the first time. Here's a return call that came came to Mark from Terry Stewart, Victoria Airport Authority. Go ahead.
Here we go.
Mark, it's Terry Stewart, Victoria Airport Authority. Just calling you back from a comment. From what I gather, it's a military exercise, U.S. and Canadian Air Force exercise that's going on. They wouldn't give me any specifics on it. Hope that helps your interest. Very odd. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
I hope that helps your interest. Very odd.
Yeah.
So, obviously, and again, this man, Will, is in charge of the environmental aspects of the airport and what airplanes do environmentally?
That's correct. Mostly noise pollution, he told me when I phoned him.
Noise pollution, yeah, that would be...
But any other pollution.
But any pollution, right. So, when you first called Mr. Terry Stewart back, Will, when you thought you didn't have a tape, I mean, we might as well tell the whole story here. When you thought you didn't have a tape, you talked to Mr. Stewart, is that correct?
Well, that's right. Mark had played the tape over the phone, so I did hear it with my own ears. And I called Mr. Stewart and identified myself as a journalist covering this story for quite some time and asked him if he, in fact, had made that call. He said he had. And if, in fact, it was a military exercise, and he said that it had appeared to be a military exercise. And, of course, we heard on the tape an emphatic statement. This was a joint U.S.-Canadian Air Force exercise.
That's right.
And he agreed to stand by his story and actually offered to investigate further. And he made some follow-up inquiries and had the door slammed quite firmly in his face. It's the official policy of the Canadian Defense Department in Ottawa to never comment on military operations in Canada. And when I phoned the Comox Air Base, which is located quite near to where I live here on Hornby Island, I spoke with Lieutenant John Copard, who told me emphatically no such joint operation exists. Again, that standard military doublespeak to deny an obvious operation.
But well, we obviously ran into an honest government guy.
Exactly.
In Terry Stewart. And so I guess he said what he said. You all just heard it. As a matter of fact, rewind that sucker, and let's play it one more time. Mark,
yes, sir.
What was your reaction?
Well, I was quite frankly, I was sort of startled that I received that response and proceeded to contact Will, and really quite happy, actually, that at least there was some confirmation that this was not regular, how would you say, commercial airliners.
Oh, usually, yeah, the answer would be, well, they're airliners and they're contrails.
Now, let me mention one thing. These flights that are occurring over our city are typically, and I can't say for sure, but they appear to be around the 10,000 height mark. 10,000 feet, I should say. These are not 30,000 feet in the air.
Yeah, that's pretty low for anything. Obviously, That's not cruising altitude for a commercial airliner. There's no question about that.
No, and they've also mentioned to me at the airport authority that a regular contrail dissipates in 5 to 45 seconds.
That's right. And you can watch that happen on most days.
Yeah.
Mark, you're a real trooper for coming on the air with us. I really want to thank you.
Well, you're very welcome. Thank you very much.
Good night. Good night, Mark. All right. One more time for posterity. For those who might not have gotten the whole thing, it happens pretty quick. Let's do it one more time, Will.
Here we go.
Mark, it's Terry Stewart, Victoria Airport Authority. Just calling you back from a comment. From what I gather, it's a military exercise, U.S. and Canadian Air Force exercise that's going on. They wouldn't give me any specifics on it. Hope that helps your interest. Very odd. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Very odd. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye now. All right.
Yes, but of course, what isn't very odd is the U.S. and Canadian militaries have been conducting joint exercises almost monthly for decades. And it's striking that this particular exercise is very odd.
All right. Will, let's try and cover a few of the basics again. What do we know about what we think might chemically be in these chemtrails? I know that you've had some samples from the sides of buildings that are fairly clean, that sort of thing. What do we know?
Okay, well, let's clear up a misconception right off the top here. The lab samples of fungus and bacteria, that is, living pathogens that can make people very ill, all of them have come from rooftop-level drops from propeller-driven aircraft over Utah primarily, also Michigan, Pennsylvania, and a little town called Espanola in Ontario. Ermania Cassani, a colleague of mine, has done stellar work investigating these incidents in person and personally conducting the sampling and assuring quality lab tests. I believe this to be a separate program. This is, again, low-level spraying that we have the pathogenic material identified. Speaking to chemtrails, that is the higher altitude laydowns, to use the military jargon, of these plumes, we are fortunate to have, again, an independent lab sample from Ontario of rainwater that fell through heavy chemtrail plumes. In fact, a gritting that was so persistent, more than 550 residents of this small town signed a petition art. They took it to Parliament, to the Government of Canada in Ottawa, and insisted on an explanation and cessation of aerial spraying by what they claimed to be U.S. Air Force tankers. Now, the U.S. Air Force denied it. The Canadian government never got back to them, but these citizens claim that their children and adults in a 50-square-mile area were becoming ill because of this high-altitude spraying.
All right, chemically, what do we know?
Chemically, we know from this lab test that aluminum was found in these rainwater samples seven times higher than the maximum permissible safe levels here in Canada.
Holy smokes. Seven times higher than permissible in Canada. Aluminum.
Aluminum. And now we have a match. Now we have a lab test that matches precisely a patent calling for the spraying of aluminum in the skies over this hemisphere in a desperate attempt to avert the worst catastrophes of global warming.
I'm just flashing back to the story I read earlier about George Bush, our president here, deciding not to do anything, break his promise, not do anything about carbon dioxide emissions. So with that as a background, us doing not much about the whole global warming business, what's going on, we originally had no idea, Will, you'll recall, whether these were some sort of secret, horrible thing our government was doing to either make us sick or perhaps inoculate us against some sort of a terrorist attack or something like that. You imagine all kinds of things when you're talking about chemtrails. But one, and I asked you years ago, you may recall, isn't it possible that it could be some attempt at weather modification? And so now you've come to believe, apparently, that that's your number one suspect?
I've got about a 95% certainty, and I trace a compelling chain of documented evidence, patents, Lawrence Livermore lab studies, Edward Teller's call for this geoengineering project, and that's all laid out in my book and my video in a way that, while not definite proof, we have to emphasize this, not definite proof is, to me at least, the most logical and compelling chain of evidence that we have.
Well, what would be the science behind it? If you put aluminum in the air in the manner that we're imagining is being done right now, and certainly you have the samples to prove it, what would the aluminum do? How would this help modify the weather? What's the idea behind it?
Edward Teller recently told CBS News that the simplest solution to global warming, he's speaking of, is to put into the high atmosphere small particles which scatter away 1 or 2% of the incoming sunlight. He said the sooner we do this, the better. Now, we're talking talcum powder-size particles,
mm-hmm.
particles so small that the Hughes patent issued in 94 to the Hughes Aircraft Corporation, one of the biggest aerodefense contractors on this planet, they called for putting these aluminum particles actually into the fuel of jet aircraft, aren't including commercial airliners,
wait.
So it could be distributed at cruising altitudes.
Wait. Who called for that, please?
This is the Hughes patent issued to the Hughes Aircraft Company, and it was the Welsbach patent. And we have to credit Mike Castle here, who came on your show and identified this 1991 patent for stratospheric Welsbach seeding for reduction of global warming.
And so somebody went to enough trouble to actually file a patent to put aluminum in jet fuel so that we would slowly begin to modify our own weather, preventing some of the sunlight from reaching Earth, and that indeed would, of course, we have a few degrees that it has warmed up. If you prevent, a degree or two from getting to Earth in the form of sunlight, you do begin to change things the other way.
Even more drastically, according to the Lawrence Livermore Lab, which conducted extensive computer simulations around this model, anticipating a doubling of CO2 emissions over the next 50 years or so,
mm-hmm.
with catastrophic consequences for the planet, they figured that by spraying aluminum oxide into the atmosphere, these aluminum particles, and deflecting 1 to 2% of incoming sunlight, there would be no net increase in temperature on the surface of the Earth.
What about biological effects on human beings? Did anything in the patent cover that?
No, they didn't address that at all.
Usually, before you toss aluminum into the air, you would want to have some sort of study to see whether people inhaling aluminum particles might feel poorly for a while, at the very least.
Actually, the only caution in the patent, and this is significant, was that the people who put this together, and remember, this is a practical application. This isn't theory. A patent is for a practical application.
I hear you.
We're worried that it might change the color of the sky. People might be disturbed by a milky white sky, and that was their main concern.
Oh, it's interesting that you should mention milky white, because I've got a whole bunch of emails from truckers. They're on the road, you know, the better part of the day, every single day. Will, hold on. We're at the top of the hour. When I come back, I want to read this. It's from a trucker. And believe me, when you hear it, folks, it will curl your hair.
The trip back in time continues with Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM. More Somewhere in Time coming up.
My soul's like
Listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from March 14, 2001.
William Thomas is my guest. We're talking about chemtrails, those evil things in the sky. Or are they saving us? I'm not sure.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from March 14th, 2001.
All right, here we go again with Will Thomas. First, I want to read something that is simply typical of so many that I've got. I hear from a lot of truckers. In fact, I know darn well we've got more truckers that listen to this show than all the trucking shows combined. So I hear from many, 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 many truckers. Here's a typical one. Hi, Art. Been a long time. Welcome back. The following happens regularly, long after the chemtrails linger at high altitude, and I'm driving toward the setting sun. I see what appears to be the sparkling beginning of mist on my windshield. The cleaner the windshield, the easier it is to see. The first time my wife and I saw it, the sky had been clear blue all day, except for chemtrails in the early morning. I couldn't believe it was a natural mist. So I reached around and tried to see if it was water, which it wasn't. In fact, it was crystalline and wouldn't come off until I cleaned the windshield with water. Then it came off very easily. Interesting how quick it dissolved with water. It was invisible until I was driving toward the setting sun. Since then, being curious and watching for it appears fairly regularly. If you keep your windshield really clean, it should be possible to razor this stuff off and collect it for analysis, shouldn't it? Incidentally, I never park under any trees. I'll be listening, but please keep my name out of it. And so I shall. That was merely typical of many, 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 many emails that I'm getting from people out there on the open road for a business. What do you think, Will?
I think people should wear rubber gloves, have some kind of mask over their face when they collect this material, and then turn to the yellow pages for licensed labs in their area. And, of course, the big problem with this whole investigation, Art, is coming up with the hundreds of dollars necessary for the test. But if clean samples can be taken and tested, it would help this work immeasurably.
Sure, especially if you're out on the open road driving late at night here in the West, where you're not encountering vehicles right in front of yours throwing stuff on your windshield. So essentially you're just getting whatever happens to be in the air. You could conceivably get a fairly clean sample.
Again, Clifford Carnicom, who is linked from my website, has some superb photographs of gel-like material that has fallen on windshields. And this, Art, is a sticky substance reported in the U.S., Canada, Britain, very hard to remove from buildings or windshields. And some of this material has been tested pathogenic. So be careful collecting samples of the gel material.
People say and ask various things, Will, like there would have to be so many people involved in this. On the other hand, if this was stuff put into jet fuel, there wouldn't have to be that many people who would know about it, would there?
Exactly right. And if it's a military operation and we have positively identified this as primarily KC-135, KC-10 U.S. tankers, it's very easy to compartmentalize this and keep it very quiet. Again, my video has a very disturbing clip, especially disturbing to me because, again, Art, I did not want to go here to the commercial airliner hypothesis. We have unmistakable evidence of an MD-80 airliner spreading plumes far thicker than normal contrails across two lingering plumes laid down previously. So it appears that in some instances, airliners may be used to spread this material as well as the tankers.
All right. In order to do tonight's program, we have a number of contrail photographs that you have provided for us on my website, and I want to discuss some of them with you, William. Folks, if you go to my website right now, www.artbell.com, click on program and tonight's guest info, it'll take you to the name William Thomas. Directly below the name William Thomas, you will see the second item, which I want you to click on, entitled Contrails from Around the Country. And there is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 pictures there. Now, going down to the photograph of New Hampshire, we'll discuss these various photographs, but going to the one of New Hampshire, you know the one I'm talking about, Will?
I believe so, yeah.
Okay. Will, that is what our sky looked like here in Pahrump, Nevada, after we had a couple of X's above us on that day that I described to you. The entire sky turned to kind of a misty, dingy, oily mess, just the way the New Hampshire picture shows. And it's absolutely remarkable. The other photographs show various other contrails that we don't think are contrails. And here's one where there's obviously one contrail, but then something else by it spreading way out that obviously is not a contrail. And there are several pictures of Atlanta, Georgia. Atlanta, what a mess there. My God, I get these all the time. People are sending me these all the time. Are you able to look? Do you know what's up there?
And these are recent photographs. These are 2001, in fact, most of them within the last few months. So this is continuing. In fact, I live on a little tiny island off the coast of Canada called Hornby Island. And we have seen massive, underlying massive spraying here 5 of the last 8 days. Just after I gave a chemtrail presentation here on the island and showed my video, almost as if they were advertising, putting these billboards in the sky for the unbelievers to look at these unmistakable patterns.
Well, if what we're seeing is what you have suggested it might be in an attempt at weather modification, then I suppose our discussing it wouldn't change it. I suppose any revelation that anybody might have or even anything in the press wouldn't change it. They'd be doing what they're not going to stop doing what they're doing no matter what.
Art, if you remember back to our first show, I told you and your listeners that my feeling was that this was an act of desperation.
Yes.
And I am more than ever convinced that this is a desperate operation to avert an economic catastrophe. Let's remember that the biggest environmental lobby on this planet is not Greenpeace. It's the insurance companies. Insurance companies that are bigger than big oil, bigger even than the International Trade in Arms. insurance companies that are losing $92 billion a year. That's a documented figure.
It's a lot of money.
Three times the dollar cost of the Vietnam War because of extreme weather events.
That's right.
The insurers are freaking out. They are going to the capitals of Canada, the U.S., Britain, and saying, look, if we go down, the banks that back us go down, Wall Street goes down, the whole thing stops. You have to get a handle on global warming. And the choices are stark. Lawrence Livermore Lab did the studies. They ran the numbers. If we curtail fossil fuel use in the United States 20% to early 1990 levels, it'll cost the U.S. economy, at least initially, $100 billion a year.
I don't doubt it for a second.
But,
so if those are the choices, let's imagine a president of the United States who has a secret briefing. And in this, even though this president may have made a promise to curtail carbon dioxide emissions, for example, even if he made that promise when he was running for president, and he was presented with the information, well, if we really jump on this and try and clean it up, it's going to cost hundreds of billions of dollars. Or we have a second option, Mr. President. It would require a massive undertaking. How we would do it, I couldn't possibly describe here, but I'm sure it would be described to the president. We would actually reduce the temperature of the earth by a couple of degrees, and we could keep burning fossil fuels and keep the economy where we want it. What do you think that president would do?
Especially, Art, if he was told that the cost of the aerial spray program would be $1 billion a year, just 1% of the other horrific cost, and that the U.S. Air Force has 700 tankers in its active inventory. No problem, Mr. President. We have the technology. The Cold War is over. We have the aircraft, and it's only $1 billion cheaper.
Well, let me think. In one hand, I've got $100 billion, very heavy. In the other hand, I've got $1 billion, and I'm a president. What do I do? $100 billion? $1 billion. Not a real hard choice, huh?
Nope.
And especially if we can keep burning fossil fuels. Not a real hard choice. And I'm not saying that's one the president made, but it's logical that he would have had this presented to him. Now, I tell you, Will, I want to take a second out, and I want to, you and I have discussed so many times why this is not in the major press, why the networks are not all over this as they ought to be. And it's been a puzzle for a long time. Finally, the USA Today came to Will Thomas and interviewed Will Thomas and wrote the following article that I'm now going to read to you. This is USA Today. Tracy Watson wrote it. And let me read it to you. Here's how they treat it. A new conspiracy theory sweeping the internet and radio talk shows has set parts of the federal government on edge. The theory, the white lines of condensed water vapor that jets leave in the sky called contrails are actually a toxic substance the government deliberately sprays on an unsuspecting populace. Federal bureaucracies have gotten thousands of phone calls, emails, and letters in recent years from people demanding to know what's being sprayed and why. Some of the missives are threatening. It's impossible to tell how many supporters these ideas have attracted. But the people who believe them say they're tired of getting the brush off from officials and they're tired of health problems that they blame on spraying, in quotes. This is blatant. It's in your face, says Philip Marie Sr., a retired nuclear quality engineer from Bartlett, New Hampshire, who says the sky above his quiet town is often crisscrossed with spray trails. He says no one will address it. Everyone stonewalls this thing. The situation Marie and others describe is straight out of the X-Files. He and others report one day looking up at the sky and realizing that they were seeing abnormal contrails, contrails that lingered and spread into wispy clouds, multiple contrails arranged in tic-tac-toe-like grids or parallel lines, contrails being laid down by white planes without registration numbers. Believers call these tracks chemtrails. They say they don't know why the chemicals are being dropped, but that doesn't stop them from speculating. Many guess the federal government is trying to slow global warming with compounds that reflect sunlight into the sky. Some propose more ominous theories such as a government campaign to weed out the old and sick. Exasperated by persistent questions, the Environmental Protection Agency, NASA, the Federal Aviation Administration, and the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration have joined forces. They did this last fall to publish a fact sheet explaining the science of contrail formation. A few months earlier, the Air Force had put out its own fact sheet, which tries to refute its opponents' arguments point by point. If you try to pin these people down and refute things, it's, well, you're just part of the conspiracy, says atmospheric scientist Patrick Minnis of NASA's Langley Research Center in Hampton, Virginia. Langley, huh? Logic is not exactly a real selling point for most of them. Nothing is, quote, out there, end quote, except water vapor and ice crystals, say irritated scientists who study contrails. Some, such as Minnis, are outraged enough by the claims of chemicals that believers have trolled internet chat rooms to correct misinformation or have gotten into arguments with callers. Now, check that out. Government officials trolling internet chat rooms to correct misinformation or have gotten into arguments with callers. Conspiracy nonsense, snorts Kenneth Sasson, an atmospheric scientist of the University of Utah. These things are 30 to 40,000 feet in the atmosphere. They're tiny particles. They're not going to affect anyone. The cloud-forming contrails that conspiracy theorists find so ominous are perfectly natural, Minnis says. The odd grid and parallel line patterns are easily explained as contrails blown together by the wind, scientists say. So there it was, Will. That's the USA Today story. And I think people ought to know how they got this story. They came to you, didn't they?
They did. They talked to me for over an hour. I gave them extensive documentation and photographic evidence as well and pointed them to Clifford Carnicum, who they also interviewed for that meteorological data proving these could not be contrails.
So, Tracy Watson was a gal, right, from
yes.
USA Today? She was the one...
Senior reporter.
Senior reporter for USA Today. All right, fine. What was that conversation like? I mean, obviously you're laying your whole thing on Tracy because you know you've got the mainstream press right here, so you're expecting some of what you said, you know, to make it into the story, and you're trying to impress Tracy of the gravity of this situation, and that it's not just a bunch of ice crystals. So, I mean, what kind of things do you say to her, and what does she say?
Well, I thought I was talking to journalist to journalist. I have been in this profession for more than 30 years. I've won awards for my work, and I thought, speaking on a professional level, keeping to the facts, avoiding unfounded allegations, hyperbole, just sticking to the documentation, including the more than 1,000 eyewitness reports, including the photographic evidence, the lab sample from Ontario. I mean, you know, as I say, we talked for over an hour. It was clear off the top of the conversation that Ms. Watson had an agenda, and USA Today had a very particular interest in quashing this story.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, Will, as I read this story, it occurred to me that if you changed what we were talking about and substituted NASA people or scientists for some of the scientists in the story here who are commenting, you could have a story about UFOs with a chuckle at the end. You know, it's just, they treat it exactly like that.
Exactly the same. And I have to say that the contrail information presented in her story is 100% accurate. We are not talking about contrails, and in no place in this story did she quote any researcher or investigator into the chemtrails phenomena. She reported no factual information, and frankly treated these pilots, police officers, and military people who are reporting this phenomena as conspiracy theorists, as idiots. I'm outraged, frankly, as a journalist, by this very, very poor attempt at reporting. Skepticism is fine. I expect it from the media. I have no problem with the hard questions. However, this story was so blatantly biased, in its approach going in that the, you know, the this idea of contrails blown together by the wind, I think, exemplifies the hot air that was blown in this story.
Well, you know, before people get too cynical and say, ah, baloney, I don't believe it, you should know there have been several instances in the United States, folks, where our own government has sprayed in order to test the spread of disease. They've actually made people sick. This is not conspiracy stuff. This is well documented. You know about it, Will, don't you?
More than 50 years of open-air experimentation on the American, Canadian, and British public. Documented, by the way, in two congressional investigations.
All right, so we know all of that's true. So before you say our government would never, ever do anything like that, you should go read some of the congressional testimony. That's what I think. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM, all about chemtrails tonight.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from March 14th, 2001.
My Lord.
Networks presents Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from March 14th, 2001.
Good morning, everybody. We will eventually get the phone lines open so you can talk to William Thomas. But we're kind of laying the case out here. Now, you heard that USA Today article. What did you think? I thought, frankly, we could have transferred it right over to a UFO story with scientists saying Boulder Dash, maybe a comment or two from NASA, and then a great big chuckle at the end. Kind of came down the same way, didn't it? Anyway, back to Will Thomas in a moment. Stay planted.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from March 14th, 2001.
Alright, now I am not saying that what I'm about to read is the result of chemtrails. I'm just going to read it to you because, again, it's typical of what I'm getting. I'm going to omit the person's name. Dear Mr. Bell, how many letters do you get which start out, I've never written a letter like this before? Well, I can assure you I haven't. My name is, and it's a woman's name, I'm going to not read her name. I'm now 53 years old. I apologize up front for any and all spelling errors, as I have recently had another brain tumor removed, and spelling is just coming back. That's why I'm writing to you. I hail from Arizona originally, then past 8 years, been in Alaska, Yukon, Whitehorse, then on to Vancouver, B.C. My husband and I reside now in Blaine, Washington, but for 3 years, we drove a semi up and down the I-5 corridor into California and back to Vancouver, or sometimes to Nogales, Arizona, and back during this period of time. We'd notice a white powdery substance all over our newly washed truck, as did others on theirs. I began to get headaches, unbearable ones. We were careful not to touch the substance, but they found brainstem tumors in me the size of a grapefruit at BC Hospital, transferred me to another hospital for a scheduled surgery in New Westminster, about 25 minutes away from the other one. In a short amount of time, days, I awoke in intensive care, was only told that I'd had surgery as my stomach had torn. A few weeks later, another tumor removed. Mr. Bell, I was, and pretty much have been, in the spitting image of health. The story turns yet again. For some inexplicable reason, my immune system just seemed to have shut down. 2.5 months in a hospital, fed through a stomach tube. No white count to be found. Maybe red, not sure. I'm not promiscuous in any way, but was still checked for various things to find the why of it all, AIDS, leukemia, and so forth. This was not because I was anemic or it was a low count. They were, for all intents and purposes, gone. My immune system gone. Long story short, visa expired and deported from Canada. No follow-up care after that, but I did indeed walk out of the hospital. Once again, we drove the I-5 corridor. They said it wasn't malignant, called melanoma now. Once again, white spider web things upon our truck. And after a few months, headaches again, Mr. Bell. Sadly, another brain stem tumor. Same place, bigger. Had it removed at Seattle, Harborview. And she names the doctor. This tumor, this time, was iffy. 50-50. It might be cancer. A course of radiation for 6 weeks. Every day was given. Also, every 4 months for past year, MRI scans to see if it comes back. Dye injected to stain any tumor cells if they would be there. At this time, my cholesterol went up to 308, still is there. No change in food diet from usual. We stopped trucking. My husband does computer work and so forth now, but yet blood work still in anemic levels despite vitamins. All around us, this substance still, the webs on the trees now, also on an everyday basis, I watch chemtrails being made, and I mean every day, two huge ones. So we began taking photographs, dreadful pictures. I'm convinced 100%, not a shadow of a doubt, with every fiber of my being, that I am getting sick from the chemtrails, and the substance is falling upon trees and trucks from them. Once again, the headaches have begun. So it goes on, but I'll leave it right there. Will, have you ever heard anything like that?
I'm afraid I have. The hardest part of this work over the past 2 years has been receiving hundreds of emails like that and experiencing the pain and fear of so many people. Over the past 2 years, the Centers for Disease Control tells us that we have experienced 57 weeks of an epidemic of fatalities, not illness, deaths, mostly among the elderly and also among the children. And these epidemic levels of fatalities, according to the Centers for Disease Control, are not from flu, but from flu-like illnesses, acute upper respiratory problems, gastrointestinal problems, that when tested in jammed emergency rooms, hospital corridors, doctor's offices, CDC has found that a maximum 33% of Americans are testing positive for the flu. And the national average for acutely ill American citizens is 15% with the flu. The CDC is now saying that these illnesses and fatalities could be from an unknown pathogen that doctors cannot diagnose. And we have a story out of England in the national press saying that, once again, refrigerator trucks being used as mobile morgues 40% are of the elderly entering hospital with this flu-like illness die in hospital.
All right, listen, Will, while you were just saying all of that, I noticed that at the bottom of this particular email that I printed out, the one I just read to you about the lady, she put a phone number there. So while you were just saying all that, I called the phone number, and she wants to come on the air.
Fantastic.
Here she is, and I, as you know, ma'am, I did not give your name on the air, and I would not do that unless you wish to do it. You're on the air right now. If you want to give your name, you're welcome to. If you want to remain anonymous, you're welcome to do that as well.
Well, thank you so much, Mr. Bell. What a privilege to speak to both of you gentlemen this evening. Yes, my name is Jenny, and I'm quite willing to give my name, and I fervently believe that letter. I'm so pleased that you read it. Maybe there are other people who will hear this, but something is in our skies. Just this morning, I was looking out of my window. I am right on the BC borderline in Blaine, perhaps about 3 hours from Seattle. And I noticed a chemtrail starting from the ocean. I'm right in front of the ocean. I could spit and get into the ocean. It was going straight up into the air, Mr. Bell. I don't know any plane, and I know that we go to Seattle seaports, and I also know our airports, I beg your pardon, and I know that there are airports as well in Vancouver. I can see White Rock, for example, so I know that there are plane paths, but these are not contrails. These are chemtrails, and they bulbous out. Sometimes they look sort of like whale spines, you know, that kind of fingery, spidery look.
Well, Jenny, if what you say is true, this has obviously ruined your life. I mean, brain stem tumors. Jenny, you were in trucking, right?
Well, my husband was, yes, and he taught me to drive the semi.
Okay, so did you talk to other truckers? Is this common that truckers notice?
When these headaches started, I would only relief drive on occasion if my husband was very tired, and to stay awake my own self, you know, you have a CB and you speak with other truckers.
Right, sure.
We did this 7 days a week for 3 years solid, and I mean maybe one day out of the truck a month, if that, and we consistently drove the I-5 corridor. And just other truckers would say they had headaches. I would ask sometimes if anybody was pulling in a truck stop if they had any aspirins or Tylenol, anything with codeine. I was just in agony. And I would make jokes. I would say, we washed our truck today, and I feel like I have a headache the size of a brain tumor. This is not a normal Little did I know those words would fall true, but this has affected my life. I have a grandson that was born when I had this brain, the second one removed. This one grew all into the vein in my neck. I have lost one of my major arteries. I've been subjected, God knows, I listened to Dr. Lorraine Day, what MRI scans do, and because of these tumors, I'm subjected to those. I mean, it's this never-ending circle, but...
I understand, but other truckers notice the same thing.
Oh, yes, I would get on and ask, I would ask if anyone had any aspirins or anything, you know, it would be 3 a.m, and I was in agony, and they would start coming back on saying, I have a headache, and blah, blah, blah. People would start mentioning, oh, I noticed this powder, this goo, my windshield has, like, plaque on it. I couldn't get it off, I had to get a snow scraper. I mean, people were ill, diarrhea or dysentery, profuse vomiting. A lot of people said they were having projectile vomiting and blinding headaches or having to pull their trucks over. Mine just seemed to be a tumor. And if I mentioned to a doctor...
Just a tumor? Just a tumor?
It was a meningioma, the first one. And it was on the brain stem, and yes, indeed, it was the size of a grapefruit. I tested negative when my immune system broke down, by the way. I mean, I didn't have any... There was no explicable reason, and it is documented on medical record. There was no explicable reason whatsoever, Mr. Bell, why my immune system just shut down. But I had virtually no count, zero count.
You had no immune system then?
None.
All right, Jenny, I've got to move on, but I really want to thank you for coming on the air and validating what I read.
Well, absolutely, and thank you so much for reading my letter. God bless you, and please keep up the good work on these chemtrails, because something is in our skies.
No question about it. Thank you very much. All right, now, having heard all of that, Will, you know, even having said that I'm very well aware of the congressional testimony involving our own government having sprayed its citizens for various tests, sometimes making us sick, the great San Francisco experiment, for example. I know they've done that, but I'm still, and I always have been, maybe I'm naive, Will, but I don't think there would be a massive conspiratorial giant program to try and make us sick. I actually don't believe that our government is that evil. Maybe that makes me really, really naive, but I don't believe that. I think the more likely explanation is the one that you've come up with. The question is a side effect of the aluminum or perhaps some of the biological agents, and we haven't talked about those yet, that have been found in chemtrails, is there some sort of side effect that is making some people sick?
I believe so, and I agree with you. I don't believe that for a minute that this is a deliberate attempt to sicken and kill American or Canadian citizens.
No.
I believe that these are unintended consequences, collateral damage in a military term for an operation deemed essential somehow to national security. Biological weapons, and I am a reluctant authority on these weapons, having written a book on it, are not spread from high altitudes, certainly not over a period of years. They're spread at very low altitudes once or twice, and of course the contagion spreads very rapidly. The symptoms that we are seeing, and by the way, low platelet count, low white blood cells, is very common among people complaining of chemtrail-related illness. William Wallace's wife, Anne, has become very, very ill with Epstein-Barr or mononucleosis and low platelet counts. I believe that these symptoms cannot be accounted for by aluminum exposure. And yes, we are now getting some hair sample tests in Vancouver, on a nearby island, Denman Island, also in Ontario, showing surprisingly elevated levels of aluminum in people exposed to chemtrails. But this does not account for the range of symptoms we've just heard.
Well, I know that in the past we talked about the chemical makeup of these chemtrails, and you came up with some agents, some chemical agents that included some biological agents. What else has, in the past, have you found in chemtrails that might account for, I don't know, like what we're hearing?
Well, actually, once again, in the chemtrails, the high-altitude chemtrails we've been discussing tonight, we have no samples of those actual plumes. We have one lab test of rain falling through those plumes, testing, again, aluminum 7 times higher than maximum permissible safe levels for human beings. The pathogenic material found in lab tests initiated by Erminia Cassani, back in the Midwestern United States,
yes,
and corroborated with other tests of similar gel-like material, have all come from low level, this is rooftop level drops,
right,
of gel-like material. And Erminia Cassani has taken this to a lab, which came back to her and said, where did you get this biohazard material? And the lab was very concerned when she showed up with a sample taken in Pennsylvania a year earlier that basically matched the components that had shown up in the later samples.
Biohazard material.
Biohazard. We are talking a cocktail, to use the military terminology, a cocktail of pathogenic molds, fungi, and bacteria that can make people very ill with upper respiratory problems, gastrointestinal problems, the kind of dizziness and disorientation and fatigue that many people are complaining about. And the lab tests are conclusive that these materials are in the low-level sprays.
By the way, Will, I went to the Super Bowl this year in Tampa. And I got some email. When I got back, I got, as my audience knows, sicker than a dog. And I had a few emails that said, hey, Art, did you know the Super Bowl was sprayed? You got a few emails like that, too, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And not just the Super Bowl, Art. Major
sporting events.
Football sporting events, rock concerts, Daytona 500, anywhere that crowds gather.
Well, that's suspicious, because if you're trying to change the weather, if you're trying to actually reduce the temperature of Earth by shielding it from some of the sun
right.
that otherwise would come down, why wouldn't you do it in as stealth a manner as possible? Why would you go to places where there are big crowds?
A similar question is, why not do it over the oceans where no one will be affected if you simply want to spread a cloud cover and reflect sunlight? Why do it over cities and rural areas? And
exactly.
The short answer is that we have measured significant decreases in ultraviolet under the chem clouds, the chemtrail overcast, just as we would measure decreased UV under normal overcast. And you would want to deliberately spray over farm fields that are experiencing significant crop losses due to very high levels of ultraviolet radiation. And again, you would hopefully want to protect cities and citizens from ultraviolet. This, I have to emphasize, is speculation. I do not know this. We do have the readings of lower UV, and that might explain it. As for the crowds and the sporting events, could be coincidence. It could be that weekends are often favored by the chemtrails sprayers, and these people were caught out under it, or perhaps there was a more insidious reason for targeting these.
That's the one I'd rather not believe.
I'd rather not go there too, and I have no evidence to support that.
Hold on, Will. We'll be right back. This is Coast to Coast AM.
This is Premier Networks. That was Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM. On this, Somewhere in Time.
Music playing, our bodies swaying in time. Touching you, so warm and tender. Lord, I feel such a sweet surrender. Beautiful is the dream that makes you mine.
Somewhere in Time with Art Bell continues, courtesy of Premier Networks.
Well, good morning, everybody. I hope you feel it's good morning after hearing all of this. William Thomas is my guest, and we're talking about chemtrails as opposed to contrails. And I assume if you've been listening by now, you understand that distinction. We'll be right back.
Somewhere in Time with Art Bell continues, courtesy of Premier Networks.
All right, back we go to William Thomas. And William, you were mentioning that you think it's high time that we actually did something about all of this. What would you have done, William, and let's begin there before I even comment. What do you think we could do?
First of all, we have to take this story to the mainstream media mesmerizer folks and put this in their faces until they put these images and information on television across America. And I believe, Art, that one effective way to drag the mainstream media into this story is by putting a videotape on local cable stations, and until there is enough outcry to force coverage by the mainstream media. And I would like to give a kudo to NBC News, which ran a balanced report on chemtrails in Memphis, Tennessee last year. It was an affiliate station. They went out and got their own chemtrail footage. They gave a balanced report, so it can be done. We need it to be done by other stations, and either show my video to your local cable stations or take your own footage and photographs and get this on cable, which is mandated to present local content. So that's the first thing. Also, listeners, I encourage listeners to respectfully bombard newspapers such as USA Today, television shows, 60 Minutes, Larry King, you know the ones, and insist that this subject be covered as journalistically as possible, given the constraints of corporate media. So it's a picture story. We have to get those images on television. That's going to turn the tide. It will get everybody looking up at the sky, and it will get people phoning each other and their representatives and authorities. So that's number one.
Okay, let me just stop you and ask about reality, I suppose.
Oh dear.
If it's what our best guess is, and this is an attempt at weather modification, then obviously the authorities have settled on this to save billions of dollars, maybe hundreds of billions of dollars. They're doing it with what they think is a clear motive to save us. And then I suppose they have their own financial motives, and oil motives, and, you know, big motives. If that's really all that is true, and that's really what's happening here, Will, what makes you think anything we do is going to change their minds? I'm sorry, but I had to ask.
I'm not sure we can change minds. We certainly need to get this into the public debate. We need to look very closely and collectively at alternatives to the course that we're on. And putting a Band-Aid in the sky, if this in fact is true, in order to continue to pollute as usual, is going to be a disaster. We see wild weather changes in the wake of chemtrail spraying. We understand that increased cloud cover messes up heat balances regionally, messes up weather. This is dangerous. We need it in the public debate whether authorities want to continue this program or not. And we need to look at alternatives. We need to look at drastic cutbacks in fossil fuel consumption and a whole new approach to living, which, by the way, is going to spawn all kinds of industries and opportunities for entrepreneurs to come forward with solutions. So
yeah, I don't think anybody would argue with
what the authorities feel they have to do on behalf of the corporations who pull their puppet strings. We, the citizens, have to stand up, go to the media, go to our representatives, and insist at least on a public debate. And backing up a step here, when we go to media, we don't have to make any claims, Art, of weather or climate modification, biological warfare, anything like that. We simply go to the media with the facts of an unusual aerial phenomena observed by tens of thousands of people, and we need and demand investigation and an explanation of this phenomena. So we'll just start right there with the photographic and video evidence, the eyewitness reports that we have in towns all over America.
Yeah, the hard evidence. I agree with you. All right, back to the phones. First time caller line, you're on the air with William Thomas. Hi.
Yes, this is Ray in Houston.
Hello, Ray.
And I had a quick question. If the chemtrails are as extensive as it sounds to me like they are, what would be the extent of their nighttime spraying where you wouldn't be able to see it as easily? If they're really trying to cover this up and they're not admitting to it, why would they not spray it?
You know, it's really interesting that you would bring that up because, let me see if I can get rid of that echo. It's really interesting you would bring that up because earlier today I received an infrared shot of chemtrails.
Wow.
And it's the first one I've ever seen. Keith has it. We've got to decide whether or not we're going to post it. But I have an infrared shot. It's very easy to take infrared photographs of the night sky. So the answer is they're there at night.
Increasingly there at night. Again, if this is an act of desperation, they're going to be spraying day and night. Now, here's something very interesting about the nighttime spraying. I've been looking into this climate change business and the International Panel on Climate Change. They say that the biggest heat differentials take place at night. So if you really want to affect global warming, you would continue to spray after dark.
There you are.
Okay, thanks a lot.
You're welcome. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with William Thomas. Good morning. Hello? Hello?
Hello.
Yes.
Yeah, it's Jeff in Midland, Texas.
Yes, Jeff.
Yes, good to talk to you again.
And you.
Yeah, of course. I've noticed a couple of things lately. About a few weeks ago, I noticed three aircraft flying, not at the high flyer level, you know, above 30,000 feet, but
yep.
lower. But they weren't flying abreast. They were flying at sort of a wedge angle and putting down chemtrails. And I thought that was kind of bizarre, and I kind of passed it off. Oh, well. And then on this last Sunday, I believe the 11th, I think,
mm-hmm.
we had the crisscross pattern, giant chessboard pattern. I came out of the Barnes & Nobles. I was over there doing my usual research for free, you know, which I'm sure they don't like. But and I came out, and I noticed this really bizarre looking sky, and it was a big giant chessboard pattern, and I thought, well, this is really strange, and it had weird colors to it. It was almost like a sort of refractive type pattern to it. Behind it was a beautiful blue sky, and then below it, which I would guess would probably be about 10,000 feet or so, maybe, it was the stationary pattern that was spreading out, but it stayed the course, you know, as far as being a grid pattern.
Mm-hmm.
And then after listening tonight, it really struck me hard. The third thing about, somebody mentioned white planes, and there has been this white 737 that has been flying around here for the past 3 years. I don't know what it's doing. It's not a commercial airliner. It's creepy looking.
You know, I'd say take pictures, darn it.
Yeah, I would like to do that. This thing just pops out of nowhere, and it's a white. It does have call letters on it, but it's not marked. It's just a pure white 737, which I find really bizarro.
So do I, William. Is that typical?
Not the 737, but the white spotter type airplanes are, as your caller says, popping up all over, and we're talking twin-engine aircraft flying at low altitudes beneath chemtrails here in Vancouver, other parts of the United States. I just got some reports this week. White spotter planes, the observer's word spotter, but white aircraft that appear to be sampling or spotting chemtrails at very low altitudes. And again, folks, we really need some photographs of these aircraft.
All right, caller?
I agree. Definitely.
All right.
I'll try to get you some.
One more thing.
Yes.
When you're doing your, in quotes, research at Barnes & Noble, how many times a day do you have to say, just browsing, just browsing?
I never have to say that. I can go in there and I can run through the entire magazine rack and then go back to the, you know, cookbook section and have a heyday.
Well, they're good people then. All right. Thank you very much.
Let's get some chemtrails in those magazines.
Yeah, indeed. East of the Rockies, you're on the air.
west of the Rockies. Call toll-free 1-800-618-8255.
Michael, I'm going to have to take that out. We have one pretty important...
Okay, don't hang up on me, please.
No, I'm not hanging up on you. I'm just saying we have an important rule on the show. You can only use your first name, not
okay,
your last
name.
Okay,
it's Michael from Philadelphia and the Flamethrower Talk Radio 1210.
That's it.
I've got a list of everything, and I'm going to run through it, and here it goes. Bright white trails against a blue sky, perfect weather... and then they go to fanning out, and then they drop at the perfect weather all at once. And all the local air traffic is grounded because I'm in Philadelphia. You see it drop into Philadelphia Airport. And then all of a sudden, these big black, and people have called them other colors, but big black, they lay the trail. And then the spotter planes, which are like corporate, high-end corporate types, go in and kind of survey the area. And then... you get high-end Air Force, and I have pictures of zeros and X's where these high-ends, like, mark certain areas.
Right.
And then these big blacks respray, and then the whites, like, have sensors or something. And then they kind of, like, you didn't do enough here, you didn't do enough there. And it all comes at once, but it's perfect weather, whether it's midday, no wind, perfect blue sky, or late evening. And one time we're coming from the Jersey Turnpike south. They all started heading from the north, and they go to Dover Military Base, and they end down there. And I've got pictures on disc, and I turned them into disc type with negatives. I've got them right here. They need to be re-enhanced. But everything you finally, Mr. Thomas,
yeah.
God bless you. I have been the proverbial whack job in
yep.
my family and telling people this,
yep.
but I am in front, I'm out in a grocery store parking lot taking pictures in Cherry Hill of all of this, and I have it, but it's bright white trails, they fall, and then the white spotters, and then the jets, the Air Force type F-somethings come in and actually put zeros and X's in the air, and then the big blacks come back through, and as I was sitting at the Cherry Hill Mall, they all start diving down to land in Philadelphia, and then all the regular air traffic comes back up to the air.
Hmm.
You see regular air traffic drop, then the big ones come up, they drop, and then air traffic comes back up.
So in other words, you're saying you see spotter planes sort of kind of like in Nam where they lay down smoke and then you lay down the heavy fire. They're marking the spot, and then the larger planes are laying it down.
Right. And then, but up in the air, there's. I'm telling you, Art and Mr. Thomas, they literally, these high-end agile aircraft, the Air Force Big S kinds, who can make a quick X and a zero in the air and get out of Dodge, and then the big planes come by, and then the spot, and the previous caller with the 10,000 foot, the spotters even go down to 5,000 feet, and you see these trails turn into big wafting, kind of like drifting fans, and then they fall.
Okay, Will?
Boy, if we had that whole segment on videotape, a video camera on a tripod, shooting that over time, whoa.
Yeah, that's what we really need that, folks. We need the proof. We need more proof. We've already got a great deal of proof, obviously. You've heard it this morning, but...
But that sequence, I haven't heard that sequence before, Art.
Nope, that's new, and... I don't know. It's hard to ask people, you know, they have lives, and to sit out there with a video camera and to try to get all of this stuff, it's a lot to ask of people.
It is. Yeah.
But
I used to have a life myself before this story.
Yeah, I bet you did.
That ended.
West of the Rockies, you're on the air with a man who has no life but knows about chemtrails.
Hi,
Will Thomas. Hello.
How are you guys doing today?
Okay.
Great. Good. I just want to give you a little bit of background. I've been following this for a couple of years since they flew over my area, and I immediately recognized them, what they were, from Art's website. So I drove to the top of the nearest mountain and got as many still photos as I could. And within the next day, I was immediately violently ill. Really sick, dizzy, upper respiratory coughing.
Yep.
I was just vicious. But since then, I've been chasing these guys and tracking them down, and I've followed them to at least one Air Force base in the United States. I've taken hours of videotape, and I need to know how I can get this to you.
Oh, boy. A videotape of aircraft on the ground?
I've got videotape of the base where they've been landing, taking off. I've had them in the air.
Are you on email, sir?
I do have email, yes, but
you
I don't have a
computer. Contact me by email, and I'll set you up with an express address.
Okay.
Will Thomas at Telus, T-E-L-U-S, dot net.
Okay.
And also, or you can reach me through my website as well, and that would be fabulous.
Okay. And about the night spring, if they're refracting sunlight in the daytime with this chemical, what do you suppose is they're spraying at night? I mean, I know it hangs around for up to 7 hours at times.
Oh, no, same thing. It actually, Will, I believe you said that the fellow you talked to said it would hang around for a long time, days and days, if not longer.
Well, actually, the patent called for a year, but
there
the Alcoa aluminum engineer, the former engineer, said it would come down quite quickly, he thought. Now, the nighttime spraying, remember the Welsbach patent talks about not just reflecting sunlight, as Edward Teller called for in his address to the 1998 International Conference on Planetary Emergencies when he was saying we had to take this drastic measure. But the Welsbach patent calls for... my video explains this graphically through animation. It transmutes a heat trap near the surface of the Earth into far infrared frequencies and allows it to escape or radiate into space. So by spraying this at night where we have this greater heat differential, I surmise that it would, if this worked, in fact, as theory suggests, actually help radiate heat away from the planet at night.
As opposed to the reverse of an albedo reflection in the daytime?
That's right. Hopefully, according to the patent, both would work together. You'd get a reflectant of sunlight and a bleeding off, if you like, of heat trapped near the surface. And all I can say, folks, is from where I'm sitting and the reports I'm reading, it ain't working. Weather is getting worse, more erratic. Climate change seems to be accelerating. So if this is the reason...
Of course, they might say, well, it'd be a whole lot worse if we weren't doing what we were doing.
Prove it.
Well, that's right. Listen, I just got email from Germany, and they say they're seeing chemtrails in Germany. Now, when I have a guest on, as I have you on right now, I tie up the international line so they can't get through. So I'm getting emails. In Germany, they're seeing chemtrails. You did say allies, right?
I said allies, Germany, Norway, Sweden, Italy, Scotland, England, Ireland, some 12 other countries beside the USA and Canada. And I hope German listeners or visitors to your website can intercede with some European magazines. This is important. Der Stern, Der Spiegel, Paris Match. These are the folks that broke the Flight 800 shoot down story and got the truth out. The Europeans are much more skeptical, I think.
All right. Well, they've got your email address, and we'll give it again here after the break.
Perfect.
Will Thomas on Coast to Coast AM will be right back. Stay where you are.
Keep saying you got something for me. Something you call love, but confess.
Thought this would work?
This is Premier Networks. That was Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM on this Somewhere in Time.
Your best. These boots are made for walking, and that's just what they'll do. One of these days, these boots are gonna walk all over you. Yeah. You keep lying when you ought to be.
Sleep a pauper and wake up a millionaire. Only in America can a kid without a cent get a break and maybe grow up to be president. Only in America, land of opportunity, yeah. Would a classy girl like you fall for a poor boy like me? In America, and a kid who's washing cars take a giant step and retry up them tar.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from March 14th, 2001.
Ramona just brought me a chocolate chip cookie. You know, one of those soft chocolate chip cookies. God, it's delicious. Survival food.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from March 14th, 2001.
All right, Will, you're back on the air again.
Okay.
And lots of people want to talk to you. So here we go. First time caller line, you're on the air with William Thomas of Chemtrail fame.
Hi, this is Larry from California.
Hi, Larry.
How you doing? I'm an avionics tech, and I actually work on KC-135.
No kidding.
Yeah, for the government as a civilian. The only thing I have a question for your guest is that, see, when we fill our airplanes up with gas, we're filling them up with the same air fuel we're putting on our 38s and 39s and 15s. And also, the KC-135, you know, is he talking about the R models or the E models type of aircraft? Because if he's talking about the old E models, they have the J-57s, and they do leave a trail in the air. I'm just wondering if he knows which model.
I wouldn't know the model designation. We've positively ID'd the aircraft because we've matched our videotape with the official U.S. photographs. Couldn't give you the model.
Yeah, because there's like 10 different models of KCs. And I was just wondering if anyone won a certain model or not. And the fact that they pass the gas to other airplanes, I mean, that's their job.
Yep.
And they do it out of their own tanks. In other words, they burn the gas out of the same tanks they pass to the other airplanes.
Hmm.
So is these chemicals getting into, like, the 16s and the 15s when they pass it to them?
Actually, these aircraft are spraying chemicals in what U.S. Air Force Weather Force specialists call aerial obscuration, and they're not refueling any fighter planes on these particular missions. Now, I have a letter from Major Gregory Barlow down in Washington State stating emphatically that our tankers, our being the U.S. Air Force tankers, do not make contrails. Why? Because they fly too low to refuel tactical fighters. They don't fly at the higher altitudes. So he is saying their tankers don't make contrails, and I am saying we have hundreds of photographs and miles of videotape of tankers making some kind of trail. If not a contrail, it must be something else.
Yeah. Well, what I fly on, because I fly them when we go, you know, go places.
Yeah.
We're up to 35,000 feet and above.
Are you refueling at that altitude?
No, we're not refueling at that altitude normally. Normally
right.
They come down, they get in a track, and I think they refuel about 15,000.
That sounds right.
That's about right. But, okay, I just was wondering if you knew what model type.
No, not specifically.
Many different models.
Appreciate your call.
All right, thank you.
Thank you and take care. Wildcard line, you're on the air with William Thomas. Good morning.
Hi, good morning, y'all. Dave from San Jose, listening on KSFO.
Indeed,
and
mighty KSFO.
Yeah, and please beat KGO, please.
Well, you know what? I'm glad you said something about that because
I can't take those.
Because we are positioned right now to womp KGO, and of course KGO is a fine station.
Yeah,
nothing wrong with KGO.
They're
the sister station, but we're going to kick their sister station butts.
You don't know how much I appreciate that, and I won't mention the other guest anyway, who's on the same time as you are.
Ah, tell Ray I said good morning. Anyway, do you have a question?
Yeah, I certainly do. Will, about the USA Today article, even if you would have been mentioned or quoted precisely in that article, if you read, obviously you've read the article, the first seven words are, a new conspiracy that's sweeping the Internet. Right there, you were dead.
You got
it. I mean, they killed you. No matter which way you would have been put otherwise in the article, you were dead. You also mentioned that, and Art did too, about the people in Germany saying that they're saying the same things as you said about the Allies. But you really said it earlier in the program, it's happening on a NATO level, your words. Not mine. And now I want to get to a certain point. This time that we're living in, we're looking at climate change, and maybe your eyes are going to roll back here, and maybe I'm wildly speculating, but we have this climate change going. We have a very strange economic time going. The Middle East is whoever gives the go signal there, mm-hmm. that will explode, plus Kosovo, plus the Russians, and on and on. Plus, you also have because you're going to this conspiracy conference, I'm sure that there will be UFO and abduction and that type of thing happening. Can these things possibly be compartmentalized, or do you see a linkage between the chemtrails and all of this activity looping back into being one thing and the chemtrails being a part of this whole? Does that make sense?
Oh, I'm not sure I completely follow you. Certainly in terms of cover-up of real intentions and real operations, there is a linkage across the board.
Okay.
As Art noted earlier, we have the same type of denial and official cover-ups going on.
Okay.
As far as all of us inhabiting the spaceship facing these perils, yes, all of these factors are linked in the sense of threat and opportunity for change.
Okay, that's what I was thinking, because I was wondering if the chemtrail was just one thread of this of all these other seemingly unrelated events that are by coincidence happening right at this moment. Like I say, the economics and everything else.
Right. Let me take another quick shot at it.
Sure.
I've been on this story for over 2 years, and it's been very frustrating, and I'm delighted tonight to have had a breakthrough and an admission of a military component.
Right.
I've stuck with this story because I believe firmly that when the chemtrail operation is finally exposed publicly, a lot of other devious government plots, if you will, are going to come unraveled at the same time. It's going to take down quite a bit of secrecy around other projects.
Okay, thank you, Will, and God bless you, and good luck to you.
All right, my friend, thank you very much for the call. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with William Thomas. Hello.
Hi, William. My question, I'm from Lone Star, South Carolina. My question has to do with pulse detonation contrails. I was wondering if you've had any sightings of any contrails lately at all with the pulse detonation. I'm just wondering your view, could this technology also be pulse detonation in a nuclear sense also, maybe utilizing a quite rapid succession of pulses, getting some rapid aerial type of maneuvers involved with something like that. I'll just sit back and listen to what you got to say.
I've certainly seen photographs. I believe you're talking of the dashed line appearance of these plumes. Given that they are coming from the same type, multi-engine four and three-engine aircraft, using the same engine types, I do not feel that these are experimental pulse jet engines or any type of engine. This could be an atmospheric effect to explain the dashed line appearance, but again, if the plane is flying at the same altitude and the same temperature, humidity layer, I can't see a direct atmospheric explanation either. So I can only tell you, sir, that those photographs leave me very puzzled indeed.
All right. Running short on time. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with William Thomas. Good morning.
Good morning. I'll make it quick. I know this truck noise is annoying.
You're in a truck?
Yes.
And where is your truck?
Southwest Virginia.
All right.
Call sign UFO.
Yes, sir.
Could the human bodies absorb this aluminum over time and make us more susceptible to the psychological frequencies that HARP is reputed to be able to transmit?
It's an interesting question.
First answer, yes, absolutely. This is cumulative in human tissue and brain tissue. Secondly, I guess theoretically it would make us more susceptible to HARP. And again, if I can harp on this, if you'll let me get away with that, it's the electromagnetic smog in cities that you're exposed to as a trucker, that we're all exposed to, that is, to me, of even greater concern, because this is daily and these are a multitude of frequencies and intensities. And any aluminum in our bodies or any chemical in the air is going to enhance the conductivity of this electromagnetic pollution, which I've written about in my book, Scorched Earth. And this is very serious indeed. I don't take away from HARP, but HARP is not on continuously. The smog is 24 hours a day.
Mm-hmm. Boy. All right. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with William Thomas. Hello.
Hello. I'm on?
You're on.
Okay. I've been wanting to get a hold of you. I'm up in northeast Washington, north of Spokane. We do have the spraying at night. We live in a canyon that goes north-south, and normally there weren't any planes up here until they started spraying. Our skies have been white as much as not. Summer of 99, we had snow every month of the year on one of the high passes up here. June, 4 inches in July, 2 or 3 inches in August, September, October, the whole year. It was the only year they've ever had with snow every month. But the next summer, we had fires up here. JP8 is flammable. Suddenly, we had nice blue skies, no spraying. And the other thing I'm curious about, I heard them talking on your HARP program the other night about creating holes in the ozone that would cause the lower atmosphere to go up and fill the hole. Would that cause a weather high that would sit over us since those fires? Because we had those highs big enough to suck the clouds from the Mexico monsoons down in Arizona clear up here.
Right.
We didn't have any rain from them because the moisture wasn't there. But we were so darn dry last summer with all those fires, and now we've had a high sit on us all winter long. We had highs from October until just a week or so ago. The high was 30. The lows were down in the teens and the zeros. No snow. 2 or 3 inches here, 3 or 4 inches there. We haven't had enough snow to shake a stick at, but we have been dang near freezing to death with the high sitting over us, and the weather would come in on the coast and go up into Canada north of us and go down the Bitterroots in Montana, or it would go down the coast to California. And it seems like we have had a high sitting here for dang near a year. But as a result, we've got extremely low water in the Roosevelt Dam behind. They've been putting a foot of water a day over Grand Coulee Dam, and we're down lower than we've been in 70 years.
Hmm.
Apple crops and everything else could take a loss because of it. You can pay people not to raise wheat or peas or whatever, but apple crops have to be watered or they die. And it just seems like there's too much going on to call it all coincidence. And why northeast Washington, where there's usually more water than anywhere in the country? One of your guests commented that the safest place if you want water was between Glacier National Park and Vancouver, Canada. We've had a drought for over a year.
Well, I think one of the answers is it's everywhere now.
I know.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well,
thank you very much. I appreciate you being on. I've got your book and your tape, and I support what you're doing.
Oh, there you are, Will.
Well, thank you very much. And, of course, what your caller has described is a radical kink in the jet stream, which is moving these high-pressure areas around. And here on the West Coast, on Hornby Island and the islands here, we are also setting records for sunshine, records for lack of rainfall here on the rain coast of Canada. And our wells are drying up as well. And we have major disturbances in the jet stream that could be related to climate change and could be related to HARP, and I believe actually related to a multiplicity of interacting factors. And boy, we had better not mess around with an atmosphere already on the verge of chaos in the scientific sense of that word.
Boy, I'm with you there. The old Mother Nature thing.
Mm.
First time caller line, you're on the air with William Thomas. Cheerio.
Hello.
Hello.
This is me. Okay. I thank you for taking my call. I'm calling from Southern California.
All right.
And it was either February 21st or February 22nd. We had a beautiful blue sky for a change. And somebody used it for a chalkboard up there. And a few days later, my son suddenly came down quite ill, fever of 104. Currently, he's been into the doctor every day for the last 10 days. And he is currently tealing from his feet and from his hands.
Mm.
Do you have any comments or suggestions? I have contacted the county health department as of yesterday.
Well, we are, and I myself have encountered severe rashes and itching. People are reporting sores on their faces. I don't have a good handle on how widespread that is. I'm very concerned by your report of actual peeling skin. I know that William Wallace's animals took sick and the skin peeled off one of his dogs and the dog died.
tests?
None of the tests are coming back. All the tests are showing negative for meningitis, strep,
right.
Everything. And the doctors are baffled, but they're not doing anything. And I'm just wondering, what are the long-term implications of this?
Ooh. Again, it seems to be, you know, everyone's individual. I've written on health for years, and everyone's immune system is different. Our genetic disposition, age, gender, things like that. Children are especially susceptible, of course, as are the elderly. And all I can do is urge listeners to take care of your family and yourselves. Boost your immune systems with supplements. Watch your diet. Don't eat foods dusted with pesticides derived from chemical warfare. Love the heck out of each other. That's one of the best immune boosters going.
Sure.
And just, you know, take care to stay strong and, for God's sake, stay away from vaccines.
Well, I've posted on Art's website, so there's some information there. If you'd like more, let me know.
All right, good.
And thank you very much for all your research, both of you.
All right, you take care.
You too.
Good night. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with William Thomas.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi. Well, I think your research is wonderful. This is Vicky in Hawaii. And, Art, I really got to talk to you about the UFO situation. I emailed you those.
Okay, that would be another time, though.
No, Art, wait. It's related to the contrails.
Okay, go.
Will, there is a major cover-up going on by the military, but it's because the contrails are being produced by UFOs. That's what those white planes are.
I don't think so. Unless they're disguising themselves as airplanes, they certainly appear...
I'm telling you they are. Get out
well,
your binoculars.
I'm telling you they appear to be airplanes. But the next time one comes by...
Look behind look above it.
I will get out my binoculars and take a look. I actually did see one UFO in the contrail of an airplane here in the desert.
I'm not talking about one UFO. I'm talking about hundreds of them. And for the last three days...
Okay, I will keep my eye on them. I promise you. We'll see. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with William Thomas. Not a lot of time. Hello.
Hello.
Where are you?
Pat in Fort Worth. My husband had a dream that they were... spray in the sky when they got through. It was all cloudy. I actually heard a friend from a meteorologist say the other day, well, here's some contrails someone sent in, and then the sky got all cloudy. But I wanted to say that the Lord told me to take vitamin C last year, and I've been doing it, and the government came out and said it's bad for you, so it's gone down in price. It's helped me, but I haven't been sick in a year. I looked up one day, and one of those contrails was so low, it's almost like you could touch it. And I was sick for months, so I have not been sick in a year. And I go along with that. A boost your immune system, there's something going on there.
Well, it wasn't the Lord. It's my wife that makes me take vitamin C, but I guess the effect is probably the same. William, we're woefully out of time here. I want to get the information out one more time. Your video, professionally produced, that people could, you know, get to various cable outlets or TV stations or wherever, and your book... are both available by calling during the day, daylight hours, business hours, 1-800-898-0284. That's 1-800-898-0284. And we want to get your email address on one more time. That would be Will Thomas, WILLTHOMAS, at TELUS, that's TELUS, .net. Will Thomas at TELUS, TELUS, .net. Is there anything else you want to get on before the show does what it always does about now and that's end?
Yes, quickly. This has seems very overwhelming and very scary, and I would ask listeners, let's put our fear in a chair over in the corner, give it a cup of tea, and let's get together and remember that real power has nothing to do with jet aircraft, oil wells, weaponry. Real power is the spirit moving through all of us. Prayer works. Shared intention works. Getting together proactively will work.
It does work.
Find out, search the internet for cactus. I'll put a link on my site. That's the U.S. Citizens Action Group around chemtrails. Get involved, get active, get in the face of media, and let's get this stopped.
By far the best program we've ever done on chemtrails, William. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Art. I really appreciate this tonight.
Good night, my friend. Get some rest.
I will.
Later. All right, folks, that's it. Tomorrow night, Evelyn Paglini is going to be here, and we're going to tread upon the dark side of witchcraft. So if that kind of program bothers you, you're going to want to tune out. If you're curious, well, we'll be here tomorrow. Ta-ta.